You're listening to the Boxing Coalition.
And he just broke the guy's heart. The guy had nothing left, and he knew he couldn't last another 4 or 5 rounds.
Ricky Barnes just smashed his soul.
What are you doing up here?
Fuck that, get your cat, nigga. You hear me?
Let's get it!
Go kick his motherfucker!
Let's see if you do this. Little step back, 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 back. Little step back, back, back.
Back, back, back. Back, back, back. Try and stop it.
He's ready to be whooped.
But you really liked to stand toe-to-toe with him in the 12th round, even if you thought you won the fight.
It was on.
Did you like that? I love you.
Hi, guys, and welcome to another episode of the Boxing Coalition. My name is Cam. Happy New Year. And joining me tonight, we have Kimo and Leon, and hopefully Daniel Lim might chime in later. Happy New Year, guys.
Take us all away, bruh.
Take it all away.
What up, what up?
Kimo, I'll go to you first. Is there a cut-off point of when you stop saying Happy New Year to people?
A cut-off point?
Yeah, like...
Generally in life?
Yeah, like if it's February, can you still say Happy New Year to someone?
It's never too late, Cam. The streets have been hungry for this show. And I know we're a bit, you know, we're a bit the cocktease of fucking podcasting because we never give it to them, but... It's about to go fucking down today.
It is indeed.
So they can rejoice.
Definitely. And Leon, how are you?
Yeah, very well, thank you. Very well.
How's the beginning of 2020 treating you?
Yes, all right. Not much going on, really.
All right, fair enough. Short and sweet. All right, let's get into it because we've got a lot to cover. Leon can't be on for the full show. And, yeah, as I said, we've got a lot to cover. So I'll kick us off, taking it back just to be a bit more in tune with the time frame, because we are going to cover 2019 awards. So let's just finish off November of December of 2019. As I said, I'll kick us off with the rematch between Andy Ruiz and Joshua. Joshua surprised me, man. I didn't really see him or think that he would be able to, within one camp, adjust and be able to fight on the back foot and have lateral movement and boxing move and grab hold. Like, did he do it well? No. But was it effective? Yes, because, you know, he did nullify anything Ruiz really had. Ruiz did, you know, land an odd shot here and there, but he was absolutely nullified. And Joshua didn't look comfortable doing it. It's like he was, you know, trying to dance with someone for the first time. It was very awkward, especially when he was trying to, you know, grab hold. He just looked so awkward. But it worked. It's putting back into the mix between, you know, the big three, including him, you know, Wilder and Fury. I know when I go to Kimo, he's going to have a lot to say about Ruiz, so I won't go in too much on Ruiz. But I got it wrong. I thought Ruiz would do the same thing again. He didn't. Josh adjusted, and nothing more to say. So over to you, Kimo, to shit on that fat boy.
It's funny how you say, Cam, that AJ didn't do it well, because it did look very awkward, robotic, and kind of uncomfortable. But sometimes that's what you got to do to win a fight, right? I'm not going to fault him for that.
Yeah. Ideally.
And I can imagine.
Huh? Sorry to cut you off, but ideally you want to avenge a knockout loss without knockout win. But he obviously didn't get that, but he did the second best thing, which is totally, you know, almost win like 12-0, 11-1. But yeah, sorry to cut you off.
No, but I mean, let's be honest, right? Like, if I were his trainer, I would be telling him every fucking minute of every day not to exchange with Ruiz, right? And it might take a little bit of away of that mindset of going for the knockout, because that's where he got caught and that's where he got hit with the shot that he didn't see. It's funny though that we kind of think that AJ is back in the mix, because frankly, when I just looked at the overall reactions out of that fight, I didn't really get that feeling, because I feel like everybody still thinks as AJ someone who's very vulnerable. Cause one thing about that fight, like I was at the edge of my seat the whole time because of the way that AJ was quote unquote boxing.
Yeah.
You know, I could feel the tension in the air, right? I could feel like, oh my God, he looks so awkward. He looks very uncomfortable. He looks almost fearful of what's going to come back from Ruiz.
Yeah.
This could go wrong at any moment. And that's, you know, we've had that before with him. We've seen that vulnerability, and I think that still very much exists. And I didn't exactly see, you know, a very, very strong, you know, fight-changing jab, for example, or power from him that I think, like, okay, you know, like maybe he could have a chance against Wilder or Fury. So, but whatever, man. Like, we have to give him credit. He avenged his loss, and he got back in there. I know we all said on the show before that he doesn't really have much of a choice because he would lose face if he didn't rematch for Ruiz, but he fucking did it anyway.
Yeah.
And he won. So he faced his fears and, you know, take away all of the fucking philosopher bullshit that he always talks about. I do give him credit in that respect. You know, mentally, I think he's a strong guy. You know, he doesn't just fold for anybody in the face of competition. So props to AJ, man. Now on to Ruiz. Okay. This fucking guy is an absolute letdown. He's very talented. We all know that, but he struggled with this his entire career. And correct me if I'm wrong, Cam, but I actually talked about this before, because everybody seems to forget that this guy was a fucking failure when he became a prospect, right? Because he came onto the scene. Everybody knew he was talented, but there was weight problem after weight problem. And the weigh-ins at an Andrew Ruiz fight became almost like an event in itself, because it's like everybody was taking bets on how much of a fat fuck he would be on this fight, right? I remember those talks, man. I remember also we had this chat a lot with Nyota, because he was in the beginning, he was a bit of a fan of him, and then he let it go because he's like, dude, this guy is just eating fucking tamales every day and he's not performing, right? He's not being a professional. And he had his breakout moment against AJ and it completely collapsed after that once again. He came in overweight. He looked slow. He looked lethargic. And frankly, he couldn't pull the trigger. And the entire post-fight interview just pissed me off. And I wish I could do the imitation as good as Black Ski Mask Joe does it. But it's just, I don't know, man. To me, it's just disgraceful. You know, you're the heavyweight champion of the world. You finally got a title on a break that was, you know, given to you. Like you came into that fight by accident. You took advantage of it, and then you pissed all of it away.
Yeah.
I don't have respect for that, man. And I certainly don't have respect for somebody who's a professional athlete who comes in as a fucking fat ass. And all these idiots, you know, that came out of the woodwork all of example and said like, oh, you know, I can be a fat ass too and achieve in life. You know, like, oh, Ruiz looks just like me. No, dude, there's no excuse for that. This is a professional athlete, okay? He shouldn't look like that. No matter what the circumstances are, no matter what your genetics are, that is not normal. Right? Period.
Yeah. And you bring up a good point about his post-fight, because me and a lot of people, including you guys, you know, we often shit on AJ's, you know, air quote humbleness, and, you know, he's a bit too plastic and a bit too media friendly. But after that first fight in New York, he put his hands up, you know, he praised Andy. And then Andy just looked like a sore bitch after the fight. Oh, give me the third match. And oh, I'm sorry, Dad. I'm sorry, Manny, blah, blah, blah. It's like, nah, man, he give you props. Give him props back.
Mm. Yeah, and he just, I mean, I'll never forget that little photo of his trainer looking at him during that segment, right? Like, it's just, it's just really disappointing, man. Like, and I know, Cam, you're allergic to this, you know? I know you cringe on the inside whenever a boxer says, you know, no excuses, but blah, 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 excuses.
Yeah. I like, fucking hate that.
I fucking hate that too, man. Like, just dude, it's your responsibility as a professional athlete to prepare to the utmost, you know, to the utmost perfection that you can. And if you don't fucking do that, that is your fault. A fight is not just 12 rounds in the ring. It's outside of the ring. It's the 2 months leading up to it. It's everything, man. You can't just say, like, oh, I didn't work out this time. You know, I'll train better and then I'll fucking knock his ass out. No, you didn't do your goddamn job. Stop making these fucking excuses. And his whole camp was denying it as well, by the way. Like, everybody knew that this was going on because there was a lot of press around this. Like, is he going to be fit? Has he been partying? How's his weight? Everybody was talking about it and they kept lying to the media saying like, oh no, we're in the best shape of our lives. And then you proceed to do that after the fight.
Yeah, I see your point, Kimo, but what else are they realistically going to say? They're not going to say, no, he's not been training. He's a fat ass, are they?
But yeah, but then after the fight, shut the fuck up. You know what I mean? Like, if you're going to do that the whole time, don't come after the fight then and suddenly say like, oh, we didn't do it right and we'll knock him out the next time. Fuck off, man. Seriously. Yeah. Like, it really, really pissed me off. And it, yeah, like you said, kind of maybe took a little bit of shine away from AJ, but whatever, man. AJ's back. He's got the entire country behind him again. He is the champ again. So whatever, man. Good for him. He fucking did it. And, I take my hat off to him for that.
Before Leon. I go to Leon, what is your opinion on him in the last few days saying that he split from Manny Robles? Like, kind of feel sorry for Manny because, like, he can't control if his guy's not training and not coming to the gym. And it just feels like he's been used as a scapegoat. What do you think, Kimo?
Yeah, go on, Kimo.
Oh, sorry, I didn't realize that question was for me. No, I feel bad for Manny, man. I honestly do. I think there's only so much a trainer can do. And I think in that whole situation, I think Ruiz was very empowered because let's be honest, there weren't a lot of expectations about him going into the AJ fight, right? He exceeded all those expectations. He made everybody a shitload of money, right? Including his trainer. And I think everybody was very thankful to Ruiz, right? I mean, look what he managed to do for all the people in his camp and his surroundings, right? It's a beautiful thing. Yeah. So it's also hard for a guy like Manny to just, after that, start giving him shit and be like, dude, what are you doing? Da, da, da. It's hard to criticize the guy because he just, you know, he just did the impossible. So I can see that that's a difficult situation. Now, is he a guy who will, you know, is he an Ann Wolf type of guy? Maybe not. I really don't know. I don't know the relationship, so it's hard for me to judge. But I do agree with you. Manny took him that far, and now they just fucking get rid of him at the earliest opportunity. So yeah. I think it's a bit low. But yeah, Leon, give us your take on the fight, man.
Well, I think it was kind of a feeling of, there's the Andy Ruiz we know and love. There's that guy that was a... that was considered a bit of a kind of failure, like you said. And I think a lot of people might have been guilty of overrating his, not overrating his win, but overrating him. His skill set, you know, like, cause he's obviously very good if you're coming at him and you're trading with him. But beyond that, I mean, like Joshua was like Bambi on ice and he was still able to avoid him for the entire fight, really. You know, a couple of things landed, but like that was a very nervous, not a particularly good performance from AJ, and Ruiz could do nothing to counteract it. Like, imagine AJ tries to do that to Wilder now, like run around like that, you know, backing out, pulling away and stuff. It would be, he'd be lambs to the slaughter. So I think Ruiz, that was the real Ruiz we got. So I wasn't surprised that AJ did that to him. Cause I think a lot of people were overrating him going into this fight. You know?
Yeah.
It was shit. Really, really fucking shit.
No, it's true. Cause I normally rewatch fights and I just really couldn't be bothered. Cause I thought, what am I going to watch? What am I going to watch a big dude just run around the ring and then grab hold of the fat dude every time he gets close? That's not boxing.
No, I was going to say, man, listen, I brought this up on the last show, if I remember correctly. Andy Ruiz is not just flawed in terms of his discipline, right? He is also flawed as a boxer. Like, it was absurd to me how many people came out and started saying that this guy has the hand speed of a fucking featherweight and all of this shit.
Like, he's got great hands. He's got, for a heavyweight, he's got fantastic hands.
And he does.
Can take a dig. And he can.
He does.
Well, I don't know if he can punch because we don't know. Like, there's a lot of where that punch landed about that AJ fight. We've got to be honest. I'm not saying it's a lucky punch because he landed on him, but that was, you don't often get that effect, you know, where he was obviously gone for rounds and rounds there.
That's fair, but I think we've got to give him the benefit of doubt.
To give him all the credit, yeah, but it's just kind of like, so that goes, that what I'm saying is I don't know if he is I don't think he is a massive puncher. I think he would make it look like a big puncher. Or damaging.
I don't think he's a humongous puncher, but hard enough.
Parker ate that up. Like, you've got to remember, we've seen Ruiz fight before. Like, away from those AJ fights. We know he's capable of not showing up. And I thought that Parker fight was close, and I think there was points where he was on top and he didn't take advantage of him. Cause I think Parker can take a better shot.
And not only that, Leon, like, Ruiz is also flawed in the sense that when somebody is sticking and moving against him, right, and Ruiz is not having success, there's no real change that he can implement into the game plan to offset that, right? Even in Parker, like in 12 rounds, if you look at the fight in itself, like you would think, like, man, he's not really a front foot fighter. Like, he didn't really cut off the ring properly. He's not able to up the tempo considerably to change the dynamic, you know, like, he's not a Margarito type of pressure fighter. And AJ basically handed him this victory on a fucking gold platter because he exchanged with him, and Ruiz is a good hooker.
Exactly. Yeah. That's what happened. And then once AJ was hurt, I think Ruiz has got good enough hands to finish people. Like, I mean, he might not knock him out, but, you know, he's got a good array of skills once someone's hurt. But I think him going on the hunt without the guy being hurt is a no go for him, really.
Exactly. That's exactly my point. And that's a major flaw in his skill set as well.
Yes,
and
I don't know how good he is.
We know how good he is, man. He's I would say he's a top 10 heavyweight, right? But against the elites, I don't think he beats them 9 out of 10 times, man. He just simply doesn't. And that's even saying that AJ is an elite talent in a shallow division, it might be a big statement as well. Like, if you look at him skill set wise, there's a lot of flaws in AJ too, man. In that first Ruiz fight, after he got hurt, every punch that he was throwing was just pushed, you know, like he pushes his punches. His legs are gone. There's no real crisp combinations being thrown anymore. And AJ has a little bit of that Khan syndrome, man. Like, once he gets hurt, like, everything just goes out the window. When he's still kind of crisp in the fight, like, he's okay. He could do a decent 1-2 and stuff like that. But once that first big shot connects, he just goes a bit retard mode.
Would you pick Fury and Wilder to beat Ruiz? I know it's triangle theories, but it's just interesting.
I think Fury would box the shit out of Ruiz 100%. Stylistically, it's a very bad matchup for him. And I think Wilder, with his range, would knock him out. Because the thing is with Ruiz, like, he's much smaller, he has much less reach, and with Wilder, nowadays, his punches are... He's very confident, and he doesn't need to hit you clean. He just needs to hit you, like, on the top of the head, in the temple, behind the ear, no matter what, and you're gonna get hurt. And if AJ can drop Ruiz, I think Wilder can definitely hurt him.
Yeah. And I don't know if we ever get AJ Wilder, like, but you wouldn't with the confidence that Wilder is exuding now, you know, kind of giving off now and the way he's fighting now. I'm not saying he's got good. He's just got really confident, right? He's not got more skillful. He's just more confident in the tools he has. And, that's what I see. And I just think he's desperate for that. He would love that AJ fight. He would love that AJ fight. You know what? I'd take it tomorrow. I think he would.
Well,
I got a feeling, but maybe I'm wrong. But if I was,
I think he would take it. I think he would take it. I just think politically with Hearn and all this fucking shit,
egos.
There's just a lot of obstacles. But again, that's not an excuse, right? They should just make it anyway.
Yep.
But we'd love to see Usyk versus AJ. Come on now. That would be.
I think it's a great fight.
That's a great fight.
I could see AJ somehow using the excuse of too many mandatories to drop that belt. You know.
Yeah.
But mandatory. Shall we move on? Because we've still got loads of shit to discuss.
Go on then.
Yeah, go on.
We'll skim through some of these and just not spend as much time. But there was a card just after Christmas, headlined by Gervonta Davis versus Gamboa, and co-main was John Pascal versus Badou Jack, which was a very fun fight. Oh, you start us off then.
No. You go first. You go through the details. I'm still just giddy about the result. I can't remember anything that happened in the fight.
Did you watch it afterwards though? Because I sent you a message about Badou doing a dance, and you were like, "What? What were you talking about?"
Yeah, I've seen the dance. I've watched that dance over and over and over again.
You've probably got.
I haven't watched the fight in great detail, if I'm honest. Once I knew the result.
Well, it's an interesting fight because if you look at both fighters, you've got Pascal, who's really a six-round fighter. He starts off fast and just fades really badly. And on the flip side, you've got Badou, who is a, you know, notable slow starter who kind of picks it up after the sixth, seventh round. So in that instance, it's kind of like well matched. It's like, will Jack do something early or will Badou do something late? And it was just a fun fight. As I just said, you know, Pascal starts fast, wins lots of rounds, gets a great knockdown where Badou did like this stanky leg and was really badly hurt, managed to survive the round. And then after the 6th, 7th, Pascal just, you know, started fighting in flurries and bursts now and again. He did that thing, it made me chuckle. It happened a couple of years ago, I think, when he fought Lucien Boutte, where towards the end of the round, Pascal would kind of position himself near his own corner. So as soon as the bell goes, he can just sit down straight away. He doesn't have to use extra energy to walk back to his stool, man. It was kind of hilarious. But yeah, he also did that thing where once he hears that 10-second clapper, he'll just go ape shit for 10 seconds trying to win the round right at the end. But fun fight. He started tiring, got clipped by Badou. I think it was in the last or in the 11th round, and he got dropped and pretty badly hurt. I had it a draw personally. It would have been like the 11th millionth draw on Badou Jack's career, I think, if that would have happened. But the judges gave it to Pascal on a majority, I think it was. It was on a split. But really fun fight, especially just like, because we're not used to that time frame to have a fight. Normally we get like a decent card with Showtime around like the 23rd or 22nd and stuff. And then we don't get nothing until maybe, you know, mid-January. So to have one like after Christmas, after Boxing Day when there's nothing going on and it's just having a decent boxing card, man. I enjoy that. I hope they do that again next year and maybe it becomes something regular where, you know, UK broadcasters maybe start doing that as well. But Kimo, did you see this Jack Pascal fight?
Yeah, I did, man. It was a good fight. Really enjoyed it as well. I didn't think it was as good as people were rating it, though. Like on Twitter, everybody was talking about an insane back and forth war. I wouldn't necessarily classify it as that. Yeah, that wasn't a war to me. I just thought it was a real good, you know, fucking boxing fight, man. That's it. Like, I thoroughly enjoyed it and I didn't really know the outcome until the end, right? So that always kept me a little bit on the edge of my seat. You know what's funny, man? Like, I think we're all guilty of this a little bit. We all kind of wrote John Pascal off and I don't really know why because I haven't really watched the fight
around twice. That's why.
Yeah. But if you really look at it, at his record, right? I mean, just going back to his record.
Oh, no, I'm not doubting him. I'm just saying.
Yeah, he actually hasn't really fallen off that much, right? Okay, he lost to Bivol. He beat Marcus Brown, right? And then he faced Badou Jack. And then there were a couple of nobodies that he beat the crap out of.
His resume is fucking strong, really. Oh, career.
Kimo.
He can look back. He's fought people, man.
Kimo, he's having a great Indian summer of his career because, as you say, I was thinking about the same thing because he fought your
Egyptian cousin, Ahmed El Bialy. And going into that fight, he was kind of like, you know, the B-side, like, I think a lot of people placed him in there to be a name on El Bialy's resume. And he went in there, beat El Bialy, had an easy fight up against Steve Bossé. You know, Bivol's a hard fight for anyone, so you can give him a pass to lose that fight. But then beating Marcus Brown was a great achievement. And, you know, this Badu-Jack fight, you know, like, Badu's not fell off since, really, that fight against Brown. Like, it wasn't a fight where he got dominated. And, yeah, he's having such a resurgence at this age again, Kimo. But it questions, you know, is he willing to take the test?
Well, whenever I see Heredia in anybody's corner, that's an instant red flag for me, and I don't think anybody can deny that. But regardless, man, like, it's like you said, his record is good, but he also hasn't really fallen. Like, a lot of these guys, they start losing in a very, very bad and destructive way at the end of their career. Like, if you look at, you know, like, Bernard Hopkins, for example, getting fucking, like, iced out of the ring by a guy who's a construction worker, you know, in his regular pastime. You know, that's when you know, like, okay, maybe it's time to hang it up. Yes, Pascal has been in some intense affairs where he got hit and stuff, but he hasn't really, like, gone down like boxers usually go. Like, usually with guys in sort of his level, it has to go really bad, and then they decide, like, okay, you know what, it's time to hang him up. Yeah. But he always kind of hung in there, and he's become a little bit of an underdog all of a sudden, where he's just a crafty veteran that's making, you know, relatively young guys like Badu Jack, you know, look. I mean, he made him look bad at times, man, and especially in the beginning of the rounds. Like, he was just, like, he was just outgunning him. You know, and that, for a veteran, that's very interesting to see. I was thoroughly surprised. I haven't always been a fan of him, but, I do respect him, man. I do respect him. And I said this to you as well, like, for John Pascal's standards, his stamina was good in this fight, man. Like, for his standards, it was really good. I mean, he slowed down a little bit in the middle rounds, but he still had enough output to kind of keep up the points and eventually win. So
it's those Heredia shakes.
Good for him. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, come on. At that age, like, come on.
Crazy. Leon.
That must be a weight off the Pascal family, Kimo, knowing that you respect him in such ways. It must be a real, he'll be touched by that sentiment.
I never really hated him, mate, but there's something unlikable about him. I don't know if it's the French thing. I don't know what it is, but.
I've always liked taking the piss out of Badu Jack, but just, you know, I think, to be fair to him, he's had a good career, but I also think he's always in close fights, right? Cause I think sometimes he lets fights get too close.
You know what?
And so, he's just always in these things, and I think he's always been getting, he gets hit quite a bit, like, he's quite a tough guy, and I think it's just coming to the end for him now. That's what's happening, like.
But Leon
has got a punch a bit, but I still think they were odd punches. I don't know.
Leon,
there's something funny about his performance.
Leon, I don't think it's a coincidence that he's in close fights though. Like, I don't really know much of his trainer, but I think he's a big part to play, because in the early parts of that round, I can't remember which round it was. It was like the second or third, I think. And Jack had clearly lost that round. And in the corner, he's like, yo, Badu, yo, man, yeah, you won that, Badu. Just calm down, we'll get him later, Badu, we'll get... It's like, bro, he clearly lost that round. Don't be telling him he won it. Tell him, look, it was a close round, it's probably gone his way, you need to pick it up. But his trainer's always consistent about taking the fight over later, but that's such a dangerous plan, man, because...
Oh, Joe Gallagher.
It's crazy. I hate that plan, though. It's to me, that's a plan B. That should never be a plan A.
No, exactly. If you might get hurt in the first couple of rounds, you might say, just get... You know, try and stay in the fight.
Survive it.
And see if we catch him in the end, yeah. But, yeah, it's a very strange... But he's always been in so many close fights, like draws with Boutte and stuff. People are crying that he gets robbed, or, you know, the judges are going against him, but it's too much consistency in those style of results.
Yeah.
For them, you start thinking, actually, maybe that, if you go back and look at that fight, you probably think, that could have been a draw, that. Like, he's just always one round away from winning it, one round away from losing it kind of guy.
And you know why that is,
just
though?
Just catching up with him.
Because he has one tempo.
Yeah,
Badou Jack has one tempo that he fights in, right? Like, and to Cam's point, you cannot have one tempo and expect to dominate in the later rounds because you haven't invested early on. The only pressure fighters that are really successful are the ones that have an extremely high output that drain and constantly go to the body. For somebody who's called like the Ripper, you know, he doesn't really commit that much to the body. He throws a good body shot.
And he gets
it
in position too, though, doesn't he?
Yeah, he gets it in position, but he just doesn't do it enough. He doesn't have that temperament to constantly push the pace. And when you fight like that and you don't have game-changing power and you're always like in there because overall you're a good boxer, right? Overall,
he's quite a top-level guy. Quite a tough guy. You're like, I don't think he's afraid of getting it stuck in, is he?
But any Badou Jack fight, automatically, you can put money on this, has at least 5 to 6 swing rounds, right?
Yeah.
Because he just doesn't differentiate himself enough, you know? Like, he doesn't throw enough, man. Like, that's a flaw. That's a really fatal flaw. And for me, like, if you have that sort of, you know, position in the fight, you can't bitch about, like, oh, I lost another decision. No, mate, you need to have a hard look at yourself, what you're doing, you know, to change that.
And what do we really know? But it doesn't feel like it's much they need to change. It was like more like fight management. It's like maybe he isn't the guy who can fight out of, that's his only tempo. But sometimes he stops throwing punches for half a round.
Yeah.
So it's only kind of like managing how you get through a fight. Well, you know, you can't afford to take those. If you're going to be this guy and this is your set of tools, you can't afford to take half a round off because you don't have the, you know, you can't suddenly up the gears and win a round win a fight at the end. Like Abraham was classic. At least he knew how to manage a round, right? Do nothing, massive flurry at the end. But Badou Jack didn't seem to quite have that kind of ring.
IQ.
I think a trainer could have given him, plotted out that plan for him to do that more consistently.
Well, it's even Pascal, like, he'll do enough in some rounds, but he'll just, you know, turn up the screw in the last 20 seconds just to, you know, maybe push the judge's decision over to him, for him to get the 10 points where Badou, he just gives away the first 6 rounds too often, man. As you said, like, look at his career, look at his resume, draw, close split, you know, his majorities.
And he could have been winning some of these fights. That's my thing. It's like, I don't understand, like, I'd rather you went all out and around and got that round in the bag and then you take a round off.
Yeah.
And you think, all right, well, we split that 1-1, then having 2 rounds that are completely who knows where they're going to go.
Exactly.
You'd rather, bag that one up. If you need a rest in rounds, you can do that. But a trainer can plot that for you, right? We're going to go out round 4. We aim to win round 4, for example. Take 3 off, win round 4, see what happens in 5. But he doesn't seem to have that. He seems to be takes breaks in rounds.
I think his trainer's, I think I'm not used this phrase for a while, but I think he needs a different trainer.
But don't you think, I think that's something Canelo used to be guilty of, and he's got better at that now.
Management of the
round. Can you give Canelo credit?
He might take a whole round off but not give up so much. But like, and he used to get some closer cards, right? So he's obviously learned that was a little fault in his fighting style.
Canelo's.
Even Tony Bell used to like to go for a walk.
Yeah.
Well,
Canelo's round management has become a lot better, you're right, because sometimes he would just take one off because he was gassed, but now he'll do enough in a round to maybe, you know, give you the decision of it might be a split round, it might have gone to either guy. But he won't just give one away. But should we move on?
Sometimes he'll rest on it, knowing he's put 2 in the bank. I've seen him in a couple of those fights recently take a round off.
Yeah.
But he'll take a full round off almost.
All right. Obviously, the headline on this card was Gervonta Davis versus Yuriques Gamboa. But I haven't really got much to say about this. I thought Davis looked shit, to be honest. I think Gamboa is, you know, at the twilight of his career, been knocked out multiple times,
yes.
And it took Davis, you know, 12 rounds to stop him. So not a good look for Davis.
Let's fight anyone that we think's good, and then we might be interested until that point.
Any thoughts, Kimo, or should we move on?
No, I mean, Gervonta Davis, the guy just rubs me the wrong way. I mean, he's so young, and again, I get it if you want to progress in a very slow manner throughout your career. I get that, and a lot of guys do that very effectively, but you're on the center stage. You are a champion, and if you choose to make that fucking money and splatter your face all over TV, I want to see you fucking fight somebody. You haven't achieved anything in your fucking career yet, and I want to see some real goddamn fights. I want to see this guy in a challenge, you know?
Yeah, because I feel like when they did, because we criticized Wilder for a long time, but that seems to have worked out quite well for him, right? And he was obviously a guy that they had concerns about, so they took a long time for him to get to a fight. Gervonta Davis is clearly a very talented fighter, so I don't understand how they've plotted out his career. Like, I don't think there's any real kind of strategy to it at all, is there?
It doesn't seem
so.
And that comes from the fight, though, because obviously they did that with, you know, they managed to do that with other fighters and do it quite well. So it's obviously all mainly on him and the people very close to him. He's obviously got, you know,
yeah, but if it's mainly on
issues,
him,
man, he's got issues.
If it's mainly on him, if it's mainly on him, then that's the issue, because no disrespect, yeah, man, but he's kind of thick. So if he's having any input,
I think there's a lot going on in the background, don't you?
Well, he's saying his next fight's going to be in pay-per-view. If that's the case, man, that's going to be a big flop. Because I can't see people paying to watch Gervonta Davis at
no
the moment.
No one's doing that.
Unless
he's fighting Lomachenko.
That's the thing. Unless his dance partner is someone high level. Like, no one's paying for that shit.
But we all still want to see him fight Lomachenko.
Yeah, I love that shit.
Yeah.
Just for our American viewers, when Cam says thick, he's talking about that Gervonta isn't very smart. He's not talking about his thighs or anything like that.
His penis size.
Jesus Christ.
Fuck's sake.
All right, let's move on. This will
even though he is blowing up a little bit, his fucking face looks fat every time he gets away from a fight, man. Jesus Christ!
It's the band camp boys. Look at Adrian Broner.
Let's get it done.
Adrian Broner begging people on social media to send him $10, man. That's a sad. Anyway, this will be a quick one. Chavez Jr. versus Danny Jacobs, man. It was kind of heating up that fight. Chavez looked a bit game, like he was up for it, but I think...
Did this fight actually happen?
It did happen, yeah. And I think Chavez Sr. like regrets that he didn't pull out, because he gave birth, well, his wife gave birth to that abomination of a son, because like, I think he just wants to disown him and just like bury him out in the desert somewhere, because he's just embarrassment after embarrassment.
But what is Danny Jacobs doing fighting him?
To be honest though, I think this, what happened kind of served Hearn right, because Hearn was just trying to use the Chavez name to, you know, have a good name for Jacobs at his first 168 debut fight, and it kind of blew up in his face more than once because of, obviously, one, Chavez quitting, two, the whole thing about Chavez's drug testing and having to move the venue to a different state and all that shit. So, served Hearn right for, you know, matching up these fights that we don't really want.
Cam, you know, the thing is with Chavez, I don't know why, but I always have a weak spot for this guy. I honestly don't. Maybe it's his dorky fucking face. I don't know what it is, but somehow I always find myself wanting him to succeed. And the problem with him is he actually has these moments where he raises your hopes and your expectations, you know, and then you think, oh my God, is it actually possible? Because the idea of him upsetting somebody like Daniel Jacobs is just too enticing for me, man. Like, I just want it to happen. You know what I mean? Like, it would just be great. But yeah, he's just a failure, man. Like, he's an absolute letdown. And even though I do think he has natural talent, like, he just doesn't have it. Whatever it takes to be a successful professional boxer, like, he just doesn't have it. Because in the first three rounds, he was looking good.
Yeah.
And you can see it. Okay, there were, again, weight issues and all of that shit, but when he comes forward and he throws hands, he's a powerful guy, man. Like, you can deny a lot of things about him, but in the first three rounds, like, Jacobs was not fucking, like, happy with that. And he throws a good body shot. But the moment where any adversity comes his way, like, he fucking quits.
That's enough talk about this bum.
Yeah, I mean, he just, he's not worth
it. Seen it a million times. He's garbage.
He's not a professional. And, what was up with that hair, by the way? I didn't get that.
Yeah.
Why did he have like blue in his hair? Oh, anyway.
No idea. But let's move on. We had a great card in New York. I wasn't too fussed about the headline. It ended up being a decent fight, but most people had their eyes on the co-main, which was Teofimo Lopez versus Richard Comey. And I, before the fight, thought this is going to be a great test for, you know, Lopez. Like, Comey is like a solid 135-pound guy, had very good close fights with a lot of high-level competitors. And, yo, Teofimo just fucking dealt with him easy, man.
No, this guy is the truth, man. Like, I know Lim is like very, very high on him, and I didn't know that much about him yet, but looking at his athleticism in the ring, for example, like the way that he moves, the way that he has that fucking like fast twitch, like explosiveness, you know, along with good boxing technique. I mean, oof, the guy is very, very exciting to watch, Cam. I'm fucking pumped. I want to see this guy fight like four or five times in a year. Cause it's just super exciting. And go ahead.
That right hand though, the speed and the power on it, like, Comey, like, he's got some great legs, man, because he kind of brings himself back up again, but, I think he did the similar thing against Robert Easter. Easter caught him with a great shot. His knees buckled, but he didn't go down. But yeah, man, Teofimo. I don't want to jump on a hype train in that because he might be fighting my boy Lomachenko, but I was really impressed, man. I thought that would have been like a 12 rounder, very tough fight. I thought Teofimo would have come through it, but yo, he came through it with flying colors. It's crazy.
Cam, do you think they're going to make that fight? I don't know, man.
That's crazy because I had the same conversation with Lim right after the fight. Lim phoned me and I'm saying, Lim, what do you think, man? Like, they're saying like they're going to make it next. I can't see it. Lim was like, I can see it happening. I'm saying, Uncle Bob don't like putting his dudes in together. And if he does, he kind of waits a while. So, they're talking like this fight's next, but Kimo, but I just can't see it. I think it's going to be late this year or early next year, 2021.
How old is Lopez now? He's like, what, 20? He's super young, right?
Yeah, Lopez is, I'll tell you right now,
22.
Isn't he like 22?
22, yeah. Yeah, see, if Bob Arum, if you go off by his track record, which is a long one, he doesn't make that fight right now.
I can't see.
Why would he risk putting his guy in with, you know, somebody who could potentially dismantle his career? Like, you don't know what could happen in that fight.
Sorry to cut you off again. Bit of a habit today, but the only thing I can see happening is Loma pushing for it because Teofimo and his dad have been talking about, oh, we'll win a world title in the 15th and we'll fight Lomachenko in that 16th fight. And you know, like, Loma seems a nice guy, but everyone's got an ego. Like, no one likes to be their name to be talked shit about. So, and also Loma wants to be undisputed at 35, and the only way he's going to do that is if he, you know, picks up the belt off Teofimo, so maybe he will force Bob Arum's hand.
Look, that fight, mate, if that fight happens, like,
oof, I'm going.
That's the type of fight where I'm willing to book my ticket.
Yeah, I told him, I said, if that fight happens, I'm going to that shit.
That's like a boxing fan's wet dream, but it just doesn't make sense to me, man. Honestly, like, I don't want to be a hypocrite and play a manager here or whatever, but for somebody who's like 22 years old to go in with this dude who's a phenomenon, like, it really doesn't make a lot of sense. I think it's really early. It is really, really fucking early. Yeah. And let's say Lopez has a fantastic chin, right? And I'm not saying this will happen, but what if hypothetically he gets in there with Lomachenko, who's a strong puncher, but not a concussive knockout puncher, and he takes a fucking, you know, 8 to 10 round beatdown. Like, that could be a problem, man. Like, I don't know if you really want to put your young guy in there like that. And I know, Lim, you're going to jump in, so go ahead.
Yeah, I think even though Teofimo's dad is a loudmouth and he comes off like an idiot. I think he'd be the kind of guy who would throw in the towel in that situation. Kind of like Danny's father, Danny Garcia's father. And I think this fight, even though it, I think the reason why this fight makes sense is because it doesn't make sense at all. And what I mean by that is because there's such little expectation that Teofimo was going to have success with Lomachenko at this point. I think after the Floyd age and the Floyd era, I don't think the undefeated record means as much. So I think boxing fans will be extremely forgiving if and when my boy probably loses to Lomachenko.
Do you think he would actually lose though?
Oh yeah. Loma is, I mean, when in boxing history has a fighter ever jumped, from one opponent to the next? And there was that discrepant of, like talent gap between the two fighters and like that fighter actually winning. I mean, I would understand if Lomachenko was kind of slowly past it, kind of like in a Kovalev situation, but he hasn't shown any of that.
Mm. No, so, he's in the prime of his fucking life.
But Teofimo is substantially bigger than Lomachenko. Like, Teofimo is a big boy, and I think if he were to fight Lomachenko, I think it would be his last fight, win or lose, at 135.
See, I thought that too, man, because like, even against Comey, he looked like a fucking big ass dude, you know, that could fill out a little bit.
He's a thick boy, and I mean like the American version of thick, not the UK version.
He might be that too.
Yeah.
It's so, funny because I'm looking at this photo. I'm looking at this photo from them standing next to each other. I think Loma got in the ring once, right? When Lopez fought. Yeah. And for some reason, Loma actually looks taller, but I think that's just the angle playing tricks on me. Because yeah, Loma, no, I can imagine him being smaller.
Tio, they might be kind of close in height, but I mean, if you just look at their bodies, Tio is really well built, and you nailed it right on the head. I mean, talk about fast twitch athletes. Like, I've seen Teofimo do shit in the gym like I've never seen before, just with respect to his hand speed, his footwork. Like, I actually think it gets him in trouble sometimes when he fought that Japanese dude. Like, he just relied probably on his power shots exclusively in the first couple of rounds, and he let it drag on to the late rounds. But, man, this kid is so fucking athletically talented. And I don't even think his dad is that good of a trainer. So imagine him with a little bit better expertise in his corner. Like, I think he can be fucking sick with it.
Yeah. He could be a running back, bro.
So he probably could, man. He gives you that Heisman pose after every.
I think Liam got cut off.
He paused himself by the looks of things.
Anyway, Leon.
Thank God, I thought it was me.
What did you think?
What's this now?
Teofimo versus Richard Comey.
I watched that.
You didn't watch it?
I've got on my list of things to watch on, what do you call it? Daily Motion.
Come on, bro. It was only a few rounds.
I know.
Wait, it's like two rounds of fucking havoc. You need to watch it.
I'll watch it. Oh, fuckers.
All right, Kimo, the headline was Crawford versus Kovalevskis, the meme machine. Pretty fun fight. I wasn't too fussed about it going into it. I thought, oh, here's Crawford against the kind of another unknown who his last fight wasn't great. But Kovalevskis, early on, he came to fight, man. He was kind of landing the right hands. Crawford stayed in Southpaw. It wasn't working, but he just kept staying and staying. And most people thought it was a legit knockdown when he got hit, and he kind of went to hold Kovalevskis, and then Kovalevskis kind of stepped back, and then Crawford, you know, fell. And I thought that was a legit knockdown. It wasn't counted. And then Crawford kind of, you know, bit down on his gum shield, and the dog came out, and he started, you know, like I said, changed to orthodox, and he started to sit down on his punches a bit more. And I think he had a point to prove then, because I think he knew himself that he got dropped, and he wanted to take Kovalevskis out, and it ended up being a pretty fun fight.
Yeah, I think, you know, classic Terence Crawford, where he just kind of, you know, lulls himself to sleep in the beginning rounds, and he lets the guy take advantage of that. And then he brings out the dog in him and just starts pushing the action and does the job. Again, a lot of retards, they came out and said like, oh my God, Terence would lose to Spence. He's so flawed, blah, 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 blah. Like, come on, bro. I think this was definitely a classic example of a very, very talented guy in TC who took his opponent a little bit light. Like, I think that's what happened, man. Like, I think he probably trained well for it, but I think in the ring he might have underestimated him a little bit. And it took him a couple of punches in the head to wake him up and wake him up. And then he got the job done. So, decent fight, but Cam, we sound like, you know, a fucking broken record, but I'm sick of seeing Crawford in these meaningless fights. I want him to fight fucking Spence already, goddammit.
Don't we all, but apparently Uncle Bob wants him to. What the hell's that? Lim, you got some horrible noise, man.
Are you on the highway?
Well, he's muted himself. Uncle Bob's saying that he wants him to fight McGregor in the octagon and in the boxing ring, so Uncle Bob, man, I think, using too much morphine on these days, but,
why is everybody talking about these crossover fights? Nobody wants to see this shit.
It's idiots, isn't it?
Oh, god damn it.
Alright, moving on, what else do we have?
Yeah, so the fights too.
Keep it short, Chemo. Who won this fight, John Ryder or Callum Smith?
You know, I actually haven't seen that yet.
Fair enough.
I couldn't find it anywhere, man. I guess it's on Daily Motion, but I wanted to...
No, it's on the Sky...
Sky Sports YouTube.
It's on Sky Sports YouTube.
Yeah, but mate, I could use my VPN maybe for that.
Mm. Yeah, you can, UK VPN. Do you see it, Leon?
Yeah. I did see it.
What do you think?
Did Ryder really win it? I heard that he actually won
it. I thought he did,
fight.
Yeah.
Yeah, he won it. By a round or two.
He just hates Smith, so you would pick him.
No. Smith looked like shit, man.
What did
Ryder's
you think?
Ryder's taking the fight to him.
What did you think the game plan was like? He's the taller, bigger guy. How are you getting pushed back by the smaller guy letting him come on the inside so easily?
I don't know. Crazy. He had no pop on him either, did he?
No, I think he's just done at 68, you know.
Yeah, I don't know how he can keep doing it. No. But I thought Ryder won that clearly, and most of boxing did apart from him and his brothers, right? So, and Gallagher getting upset.
Tesco.
Like, even Eddie, by all accounts, couldn't really bring himself to say, maybe I'm wrong, but I thought he was being quite sheepish about the result as well.
Yeah, I think Eddie deep down knew that his boy lost, but you know, he's got more invested in Callum than he has in, John, so.
Yeah, cause they want him to fight Canelo, don't they?
Yep. Or Billy Joe.
Yeah. Billy Joe beat him though, wouldn't he? If Billy Joe turns up properly, he's on that performance.
You'd think so, but it depends what Billy Joe shows up in.
That's the problem, yeah. That's the problem with him fighting Billy Joe. Like, I mean, really, what's...
Who's showing
Joe
up?
Joe Saunders done to deserve to fight him, you know? At least Ryder's come through it, you know?
Yeah,
he's fought some decent guys to get there.
Chemo,
he's
if
got
so-
Rocky, and Rocky as well, isn't he?
Chemo, if Saunders fights Smith, you know, Sky can reuse that tagline again. Who's fooling who?
Oh, Billy Joe would definitely beat him. I think actually you probably beat him quite easily because stylistically, it just fits him, man. Callum Smith is, again, one of those dudes that kind of just stands there for a lot of rounds, doesn't really push the pace, so Billy Joe's cardio will hold up. And he'll just box circles around him, man. And I think you're right. I think he's done at that weight, man. He is just a humongous guy. I don't know how he makes that weight continuously. And it shows. He just doesn't have the activity to just keep it up, you know?
Yep.
But yeah, what a great name John Ryder is. I wish I had a name like that.
I felt bad for him as well, man, because that was like his world title moment and they kind of stole it away from him. So, I hope he gets another opportunity. Anything else, regarding that fight, Leon, because I kind of cut you off halfway through.
I know, just weren't the scorecards garbage again, like really bad.
I'll have a look for you right now. One was 116-112, 117-111. That was the one that everyone...
That's the one, yeah.
Yeah, that was disgusting. 116-112 is pretty bad as well. It's that 8-4.
Yeah, yeah. I can't... The most I can see for Smith is the draw. I can't even see 7-5 for Smith, really,
yeah.
Personally.
No, I agree. 100%.
Yeah. They fucked him.
Definitely.
He's always... Let's be real. Like... Eddie's always fucked John over, man. He doesn't not like John Ryder. Like, he's done him dirty on numerous times. He's dropped him before, and then you kind of got him back in. He won some unexpected fights, but still always treating him like pretty much garbage.
He's like a side piece, isn't it? He's like the girl you phone, yeah. Isn't it, when there's no one else available?
Yeah.
Wow.
Like, he prefers Dave Allen over, like, he would much rather Dave Allen was successful than John Ryder.
He prefers people with banter.
What kind of fucking person we're dealing with.
Yeah, he prefers people with banter. Cause John Ryder is just a quiet guy, sticks to himself, he's got no banter. That's why he's on the shelf.
But Eddie's empire is built on sand, you know, so I think he's could be fucked, you know, just cause off literally the standard of fighter that he has now left in his camp. I mean, that is shot to shit, really.
Yeah, his state.
But that's
his...
what the other thing we've got to remember. Really, like on paper, Callum Smith now is his best guy. Like better than AJ. Like he's the guy with all the belts, not been beaten, and John Ryder's beat him up. I mean, that's what we're talking about. That's the high level, that's the highest watermark for Matchroom at the moment.
Yeah. All right, let's move on. There was a card just before Christmas, Tony Harrison, Jamal Charlo rematch ended up being a decent fight. The card in general was decent. There was a fun heavyweight fight between Efe Agbaje versus a journeyman called Alago Kiladze. I think Kiladze got dropped. He was like stumbling around for most of the fight. He managed to catch Agbaje with a right hand, I think, dropped him. But then eventually, a few rounds later, Agbaje got him back. But if you're just bored and you just want some entertainment, it's definitely a good fight to watch. And then also, the prospect, Carlos Baderas, got a shock stoppage. He got stopped against René de la Giron. And most people, you know, rate Baderas quite highly. So that was a shock result. But top of the bill, Chemo, Harrison Charlo. What did you think of the fight?
I thought it was a really fun fight. Charlo did exactly what he should have done in terms of game plan, man. Like he let Harrison last time slow the pace down and basically jab 1-2 him, you know, his way to a decision. And he came out guns blazing. He had a good pace about him. He threw a lot of wild shots, I have to say. Like, yeah. Charlo's, as much as we tend to praise them for being technically sound, when they start getting a little aggressive, they get really wild, man. Like, and that's not a bad thing. We don't always need to, like, put that shit down because there's a lot of fighters in boxing that have had success with this. And, you know, Cam, you know this as well. Whenever you face somebody in sparring who's wild as fuck, that shit is not easy to defend. You know, and it's difficult dealing with sometimes somebody who throws punches from all kinds of angles, man.
No, it's true because you're trying to look in that like a counter opportunity, but it's like you're worried about taking something big because he's so unorthodox. Like you don't know where the angle of the punch is coming from.
Yeah, and there's a method to the madness, if you will. And Charlo, you know, he had combinations of this. He had like sometimes he would just do, you know, a few stiff jabs here and there, and then he would just come in and throw a bunch of wild shots. And Harrison just is one of those guys that just, again, he cannot deal with that sort of pressure. He cannot deal with a bunch of wild shots coming in. And he just got caught a few times and he couldn't deal with it, man. And, yeah, Charles got good power and yeah, he fucking put a stamp on it, man. He took back his title and, I thoroughly enjoyed it. I thought it was a great fight. And even though the build-up was a bit cringe, I enjoyed that too. I like the shit talk. Harrison is quite funny as well, actually. He's a cheeky bastard. And, just really, really, really enjoyed that fight, man. It was good.
I was a bit, you know, taken back with the style of the fight because I thought it was going to be similar to the first one, kind of Harrison on the back foot, like 1-2s, like you said, but after the first few rounds, Harrison just thought, fuck it, and he started, like, walking Charlo down, and I thought, oh, this is going to be interesting, because Charlo can't really fight on his back foot. And then Charlo fought well on the back foot. I thought, what the hell's going on here? Like, everything I'm thinking that's going to happen, the opposite's happening. But, yeah, really fun fight. Enjoy that one. Leon, did you watch it?
Nope.
No problem. And I think that's me pretty much done for the fights of November and December. So, Chemo, let's hand it over to you. You compile, like, the 2019 awards list this time, because I couldn't be bothered. So, you want to kick us off?
Oh, this is great, man. We should have some, like, Golden Globes music or something. Let's do it. Let's do it. And I don't know if you had if you've had a look at the list, Cam. Obviously, I know Leon didn't. But
yep,
feel free
to,
feel free to correct me if you think I'm full of shit. But Let's talk about Fighter of the Year. So I had four nominees. One is obviously Inoue, who, I think he might actually take that from me. He had a very successful year. And that Fight of the Year as well against Donaire. Then we had my boy Josh Taylor. Even though he didn't have that much activity, I do think he kind of established himself as an elite fighter this year, or last year, I should say. And, yeah, he kind of just broke out and really, really, really became a mainstream name. Artur Beterbiev, again, he's been on the scene for a long time, but this has been the year where he really showed what he's about. And he's a mean, nasty motherfucker. And to Leon's, joy, there's also Canelo Alvarez, who, again, despite, you know, the few caveats here and there, he did move up in weight once again and beat the crap out of Kovalev. So I'll let you guys...
Can I add two names to that list?
Do it.
Manny Pacquiao.
Manny Pacquiao.
Manny Pacquiao. The reason why is because, you know, we had that early fight at the start of last year, 19, with the... Bruno, we kind of knew what we were going to get with that one, but to fight Thurman, and I did think he was going to beat Thurman, but looking back at a lot of people's reaction, a lot of people had Thurman winning that fight, so for him to be at that age and to, you know, take out one of the top guys in that division quite convincingly, like, I think that was pretty impressive. And then the other name I wanted to add was Errol Spence. The reason why is...
What?
High-level fight against Mikey Garcia... high level fight against Porter, and he went life and death with the Ferrari, so, you know, gotta give him props.
No, sorry, Spence is not gonna get on my fucking list. You can put him on yours, but I don't think he,
We good friends, I love you, yeah. Daddy, but let's get it on.
I love you, Daddy. Alright, so, Leon, what you got?
Inoue.
Agreed, I have Inoue as well. It's, what about you, Tim?
The best story as well, the best, the most interesting thing. He was the guy you were wanting to see tested and see what he was capable of out of all of those guys. And he's, yeah.
Yeah.
That,
right.
The Nair win is, I know it's, you have your issue. People have, you know, your doubts over the Nair, but I think all those really, really great fighters have one final, final performance in them. And I think he put it in that fight. And yeah. Any criticism of Inoue on the back of that fight is just a load of fucking bullshit.
No, like, I have to agree as well. Inoue was my fighter of the year. Just to dissect Kimo's list a bit. Josh Taylor, very good year. Baron Cech fight, I thought, wasn't that great. Pro-Grey fight was very close. Beterbiev, not for me. He unified against Gvozdik, but... And you going into that fight that he was going to beat Gvozdik, and also the other fight he had in the year against that Hot Rod guy, it wasn't really a high-level fight, so not for me. Canelo, decent fight against Jacobs, a high-level 60-pounder, but, you know, asterisks against the Kovalev fight because of the whole, you know, the rehydration clause, so not for me.
And because we all knew the outcome of the fight before it happened.
Not really, like, there's always that kind of question mark, like, what happens if, you know, Kovalev catches him, you know, but Kovalev was just fought scared, man. It was a very...
He was, his jab was like that scene in Simpsons, you know, where Homer lands the punch
and then the fly flies off.
That's what Kovalev had on his jab that night. And this is a jab, you know, this is a jab who's knocked people down before. Like, I mean, he was god awful that night,
very much so.
And he was still winning rounds, but I mean, I think Canelo always knew, just like, fucking just let old this fucking Russian drunk punch himself out for a bit, and then we'll deal with him. And that's what a lot of people thought going into the fight.
Yeah,
you can say whatever you want, Leon. You did not expect a knockout like that. I don't believe that.
I expect him to stop him because you've seen what Kovalev has been exposed of. You know, that's the undeniable truth about him, is that he was a bully, and that's been exposed. But you know, he went up a weight. But yeah, not for me.
I agree with you that there are some, again, asterisks, but like, I did not expect that fight to go the way it did, man. I did not expect a clean fucking knockout like that of a light heavyweight. that to me was quite surprising. But I wanted to add, Cam, one thing that I always look for when I think of fighter of the year is obviously success, but also activity, right? I find it always very hard to give a fighter of the year award to a guy who had only one fight. You know, that was a very good one, but it's a bit difficult for me, you know. And all those guys, if you look at the list, they all only fought twice a year. It's really not that much, you know. It's I don't know, man. They used to be like Pac in his prime, used to fight like 4 or 5 times a year. Like, it's I don't know, man. The lack of activity is a bit disturbing to me.
No, that's a good point, because we're going to come on to Demetrius Andrade later, and he's been very active, and so has Tevin Farmer. But to me, it's not just about being active. It's a combination of being active, but against good competition, and we're not getting either. Either guys are not active, or guys are active against nobodies. So we're not having a good middle ground at the moment.
No.
I think that list goes to show that it's been underwhelming matchups this year.
Yeah, like, I don't think 19 was a good year.
Quality of the cards.
2019 for me wasn't a good year for boxing.
No.
I would agree. Well, as I was compiling it, I realized, like, hang on.
It's a bit shit.
That's why Cam dumped it on you.
Yeah, I know.
I've seen this. Shit, man.
But the thing is, like, there's not usually, you know, you want somebody that's achieved something really big. And if you look at the fighters that are there, they're not really that big of achievements, right? Like, in a way, okay, he's now become like a household name, and he's a little Japanese guy with immense power, and it's a great story. And like, he's from, just being from Japan as well, somebody that's successful is quite rare, right? Because a lot of them are a bit dodgy, as MV2 once said. But he hasn't done anything revolutionary in terms of the sport, right? And neither have the other nominees. So yeah. It was a bit of a dud this year, man. I would agree with you.
I'll tell you one thing, though. That it does go to prove that the idea, if not the practical element of it, is that tournaments do work. If you do them properly, two of them are in that list. I don't think these guys, they're like 30, 40% off getting it right. That's the problem. It's working, and it's only running at half its capacity.
Yeah, and you look at, like,
the right person to do it, but you still need that kind of slight element of people trying to need to make a name, right?
Yeah.
Mm. So that's going to be difficult to keep doing that in all, but it definitely does work. I mean, I think that proof's in the pudding in that sense, that they end up in enough good fights to put them in this position.
Yeah. All right, so Kimo, unanimously, our fighter of the year is Naoya Inoue. So what's the next category?
All right, next one is fighter of the year. So I've got quite a few ones here because I just wanted to give as many options as possible. So obviously Inoue versus Donaire is in there. I mean, an absolute technical fucking brawl. Like, it was amazing. I really, really just love the whole aesthetic of that fight. I thought Regis Progre against Josh Taylor should be there too. It wasn't like a spectacular fight, but it was a very meaningful fight that turned out to be great to watch. Like, it happened.
I think everyone was on the edge of their seats with that fight, it felt like.
Yeah, exactly, man. It was a very meaningful fight. It was really intense, and it's just a lot of great boxing. That's all I want to see. A lot of great technique. The dudes went for it. There wasn't a lot of pity pat shit. It was just great. Anthony Joshua against Andrew Ruiz won, short, but absolute in terms of drama, like this is, you know, I mean, this was the biggest drama moment of the year.
Yeah.
And I think it's a good nominee actually to win it. Mm. Jose Ramirez against Maurice Hooker.
Great.
That was a fucking firefight. Yeah. It was a brawl. It was extremely fun. And it's my kind of fight. I would put J-Rock against Jared Herd there as well. It was a solid, like, scrap. Herd obviously always comes to fight. And J-Rock just came out of nowhere and just resurrected this career and this. I thought it was also the story that kind of made this a nominee.
Yeah.
I also had Golovkin versus Derevchenko, an unexpected little sort of maybe mini war, if you want to call it. Like, it was pretty decent, man. Like, the guy stood in the pocket and just fucking threw down. I had Daniel Roman against TJ Donahue there as well.
Great fight.
not great fight, but not really my pick, to be honest. I think it lacked a little bit of drama. Yeah. And there's one other one which you probably none of you watched, but I found it as I was researching, and then I watched it, and I was like, what the fuck is this? There's no English commentary for this fight. It was a fight that took place in Poland. It's Szymanski against Talarek, and it's a Polish, you know, fight, and it has 10 knockdowns. It's fucking fuck. Crazy.
What? Yeah, oh, you gotta send me this link, bro.
Mate, this fight, I will send you the link to everybody who wants it. This, you have to watch it with Polish commentary. It's mate, it's insane. It has 10 knockdowns, I think, in 6 rounds, Cam. And it's literally two dudes just fucking taking the life out of each other. It's unbelievable. Did I miss any fights?
Only one I would say you probably missed was Spence Porter, even though I don't...
I deliberately left that out because okay. I didn't think it was worth putting on.
I think it should be in the nominees. I don't think it's fight of the year personally, but I think it should be up there. It was a decent scrap.
Love you, daddy.
I love you, daddy. All right. Leon, what's your fight of the year?
I think you kind of have to say, I want to say the Ruiz beating AJ thing, but he's kind of, you know.
Ruined it. No, but you can't think, you know, like, go, you can't go back, like.
No. I think there's something, there was something in that fight. Like, I will go back and watch that again, definitely. But I mean, but it's difficult because that Inoue fight was ridiculous.
Mm.
But the drama and excitement, as Chemo loves, of AJ being stopped after saying, the build-up, this is that building up for such a long period of time that it has to win it, right? Just for everything surrounding it. Like, maybe not so much the build-up, but like the live fight and then the kind of aftermath of it. I think you've got to give it to that. But there was something very special about that Inoue fight, about those two guys doing what they did.
Yeah. I'm the same. I'm caught between them two. Like, Inoue versus Danair, even though Danair's at the, you know, the twilight of his career, like, he put in a really good showing.
It's a better win. Him beating, I don't know. Is it a better win? I don't know. It's difficult. I think that's such a good win, that Inoue. That's like, would be an overrated. I don't know what I'm talking about. Fuck off. Carry on.
I like Chemo, just thought it was like a technical war. You saw a lot of high level skill. You saw power. You saw a guy getting hurt. You see him coming back and hurting the other dude. It just had a lot. Yeah. It just had a lot of things I like. Like, don't get me wrong. I love like barn burner fights and two guys swinging away and just, you know, whoever lands first. That's fun as well. But the other side of me loves those technical wars, and that definitely was one. But having said that, I think everything Chemo said about the AJ fight being so big, it's AJ's, you know, first fight in America, the shit that happened with Jarrell Miller, the fact that third round he managed to drop Ruiz, and then Ruiz came out and dropped him twice, and then dropped him again twice, and it was a kind of quit, and, oh, will AJ's career, you know, will he be the same again? I think if you pile all that in together, I have to pick AJ Ruiz 1, to be honest, for me.
No. Unexpected, guys. I really thought you would go with Inoue versus Donaire. And
the thing is,
I think you...
I was watching that at 5 o'clock in the morning. Sorry, the Ruiz-Josh 1. And upset just made... Like, I was wide awake, Chemo. I was like... The adrenaline was pumping, and I was like, oh my God, I can't believe, man, like, he's lost to Andy Ruiz. I obviously knew he was going to lose one day, and I had a feeling it was going to lose to someone that's unexpected, because it always happens, you know, Lennox Lewis, and they always lose to someone they're not supposed to, but you never know who it's going to be, and I did not think it was going to be Ruiz, man, and I was in shock. I don't think I fell asleep until like 8 a.m. or something. It was crazy, and because of that, like, I didn't have that feeling for the Danair in a way fight. I was enjoying it while it was happening, but I wasn't invested.
You're watching it midday on your phone, Like, it was a funny thing, wasn't it?
Yeah, the fact that it was in Japan and the day it was happening, that did take something away for it. It shouldn't take anything away, but it does. It's like a couple of years ago I talked to you guys about, I don't think a body shot could be like a knockout of the year award, and you guys kind of disagreed. And I'm the same with like a fight of the year. I think there has to be a lot in the story to make it a fight of the year as well. I think it needs to be like a meal, like a starter, mains, and a dessert. It has to have the total package. It can't just be a sandwich. Sorry for my food analogy. I'm pretty hungry at the moment.
I'm surprised you guys went for this, man, because that's more my always train of thought, right? It's not just, you know, what's happening in the ring, but it's the impact of the outcome of the fight.
Yeah.
The drama, excitement, like, and, you know, you add in the Adam Smith meltdown as well when AJ was getting stopped.
But it's also the fans who want him to lose, plus the fans who were desperate for him to win. That kind of very online part of a fight was highly enjoyable.
Yeah.
It's the most online fight of the year, definitely.
100%.
It's just reply guy energy going on.
It was just pure drama, and there was a lot going on in that fight, man. Even the fact that it was in Saudi. That's the second fight. Yeah. Sorry, the fact that he came to the U.S. and especially the American fans, they really took a big shit on him after that, right? Like, oh, UK fighter coming over and sparked straight away.
Yeah, that was the L for the whole country.
Yeah, I mean, man, it was
the best guy lost to our we didn't even know existed guy. That's what it looks like, doesn't it?
Yeah.
All right, Kibo.
It was a tremendous fight. It was back and forth and a dramatic knockout. And I have to give it to you, man. So we'll conclude with that. Let's see. So I had one category, which is basically like, it's a mix of like prospects and breakout fighters. And I just call it breakout fighter of the year. So whoever just came out and made an impact. I had Caleb Plant for one, Lim's boy, and another one of Lim's boy that we just talked about, Teofimo Lopez. I had to put Clarissa Shields in there just because I'm trying to be objective. She did kind of, people did start noticing her a lot this year, and she did kind of came out of the woodwork. So I have to put her in there.
Noticing it for good reasons or bad reasons?
Whatever, man. Like, she made an impact this year. I don't know how I would describe it, but she did. She's all over my fucking timeline, and that says something, right? So, I had Gervonta Davis, not because of what he did necessarily in the ring, but I'm surprised. Like, all of a sudden, Gervonta Davis is like filling up arenas. And I was looking at that last fight with Gamboa, and that was in Atlanta, right? And I'm like, how the fuck is there like 10,000 people in this arena watching Gervonta Davis? When did that happen?
Yeah.
I was like, you know what? I might fucking hate this dude, but he is pulling people into the arena. Like, he was the headliner against the fucking nobody in terms of competitiveness. And he drew all these people in, and there was the walkout and the noise and the crowd was into it. I was like, you know what? He did establish himself as some sort of, you know, like, average star in boxing, and I gotta give him props for that. So I did put him in this list. I had Virgil Ortiz Jr. in there, man, but that's more of a prospect. But I fucking like watching that guy, man. Like, he had an explosive KO as well that we're gonna talk about in a bit. And I don't know why I put Devin Haney in there, because I don't really like him, but I did it anyway. So. Who you got, Cam?
I don't really understand the category, like breakout fighter, but if you kind of do a breakout slash kind of prospect, I'd have to go for my boy Virgil, man. Like, he's so mature at such a young age. It seems like he's kind of got every skill set. And they're kind of matching him really well as well at the moment. Like, he's not just fighting bum after bum. They are trying to match him, and he is ticking off the boxes. So yeah, for me it's Virgil Ortiz Jr.
What about you, Leon? What do you mean you don't understand the category, by the way? It's not that fucking complicated, Cam.
Well, like, breakout fight, like Caleb Plant won his, you know, title at the start of 19, and like what else did he do after that? He had one fight, but he didn't, you know, nothing special.
Yeah, it's a fight too.
Leon, what about you?
I don't,
None of them. none of them.
Are you fucking hammered, mate?
There's nothing. There's nothing there for me. There's nothing I would like from that list. Thank you very much.
All right.
Not even Clarissa.
Not old Clarissa.
All right. What about you, Kimo? From your own list,
I like the look of Virgil Ortiz, man. He's very exciting to me, so I'll go with him as well.
All right.
Let's go to comeback of the year.
Comeback stronger.
So we got Manny Pacquiao, we got Anthony Joshua, Jermell Charlo, or J-Rock. I think they're all good choices because they all fucking like, well, one turned back the clock and just once again showed that he's an absolute elite fighter. And Manny Joshua overcame his adversity. Jermell took his title back and J-Rock, you know, just proved everybody wrong and beat, which funny enough, later on, he fucking lost it again, but
that's another story.
Yeah, I know, exactly. So he does deserve comeback of the year of 2019. So who you got, Cam?
Me personally, I think it's gotta be Joshua again. Like, if you add up what happened in the first fight and stuff, like, a lot of people kind of wrote him off and, all right, he didn't knock Ruiz out and he was looking a bit crappy on the back foot and shit, like we mentioned earlier. But, you know, he did what he had to do. Often used phrase, but he got the win, got the belts back, put himself back in the mix. So for me, it'd be Joshua.
Okay. I think some credit's got to go to Manny about what he's done this year. And it's not like a comeback of the year, but it's like he's gone to, at this point in his career, gone to a new promoter, you know, started doing something completely different, gone over to the other side. And whatever we think of Porter, he's still beating two of their biggest names just straight off the bat. Hasn't he? Broner and Furman, two of the biggest names on PBC, and he just walked over there and beat them both.
You know what's funny though?
That deserves some credit, isn't it? Like, considering you've been with Bob all that time, new promoter, they're kind of getting you for your name and then you start, you know.
You're beating them. The crazy thing is, right, I actually thought Manny only fought once last year. I thought he only fought Thurman. And then when I looked at it, he fought Broner in January of 2019 and it's like, that felt so long away. It felt like that fight was 2 years ago because Broner basically showed up and did nothing. But to your point, yeah, man, it's amazing what Manny's doing. But who's yours, Kimo?
Oh, man, it's... Yeah, it has to be AJ. Again, all the odds were against him. He had the entire weight of the world resting on his shoulders. And he fucking did it. And it doesn't matter how he did it, but he did. So major props to him. I thought I want to give a shout out to J-Rock as well, man, because the way he resurrected his career for a brief period of time is quite incredible as well. And he did it against a very, very legit, strong dude. And he kind of outfought him. That's what was surprising about that fight. You know, he didn't try to finesse his way through it. He came to fight him, you know, and he fucking outfought Jared Hurd. That was so weird.
He does deserve it though, because no one saw that coming, did they? We just thought Hurd would walk straight through him.
Mm.
It's kind of upset. It could have been one of the upsets of the year, actually.
It was, yeah, I would consider that definitely an upset, man.
Like AJ versus Ruiz, one would have been upset of the year.
Can't we give him that fuck all the awards? We didn't build our podcast on that.
That's fair. What's the next list, Kimo?
You know what it's about, mate. It's knockout of the year. So we've got Deontay Wilder versus Luis Ortiz 2. Absolutely fucking splattered him. And Wilder is always exciting, man. Like what was that knockout against, to do with the man boobs? I forgot. Dominic Brazil. That wasn't last year, right? That was the year before. I originally wanted to go with that one because that right hand.
No, that was 19 as well. He fought twice in 19 and that was one of the
fights. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, so he's got two fucking nominees. Yeah. Like, that right hand against Brazil is just ridiculous. Man.
And the way Brazil's legs just laid out in like a star shape, he's just like, ugh.
Oh, mate, he just got iced. Incredible. I have to give it one, Canelo against Kovalev. I mean, it was a crisp fucking shot that he knocked him out with, and it was dramatic. So I have to give it to Canelo as well. We got Virgil Ortiz against Mauricio Herrera.
That was amazing.
Yeah, that was incredible.
Violent.
Yeah,
that was violent, mate. That was something else. There were a couple of other ones, man, which I watched, which were intense, fucking intense. Israel Madrimov. This guy is on the come up as well. I don't know if you guys have watched him, but he had a very, very violent knockout against a guy called Norberto Gonzalez, if I'm not mistaken. It's a bit hard to find on YouTube. I found it on Daily Motion, but it's a really, really good knockout. And every knockout on this list, by the way, I never went with anybody that sort of had a TKO-ish knockout. No, it's people that get laid out,
you know, yeah, and
possibly spasm on the floor. Gabriel Flores against Eduardo Reyes was another good one. And there's one other one, which is a Filipino fight, which is on YouTube. It's Romero Duno against Kuldeep Danda. May, this fucking KO is scary. I'll send it to you guys as well. It was on Filipino sports channel. And the guy, I mean, honestly, it's scary. The guy, he almost kills the guy. Like, he's just on the floor, like completely fucking gone. Like, it's really, really violent. It had to go in there because I don't know. Nobody's probably seen it, but it's one of the best KOs that you can find. So tell me, Cam, what do you think?
I'll be honest, some of those, like the Maldirov and that Duno ones, I'm not seen, so it's going to be hard to say, but one I would maybe add to it, would be the Dorticos versus Andrew Tabiti knockout. That was pretty impressive. That was a kind of cold
Dorticos
KO. Chisora Spilka was a good KO, but for me, I think that KO of Mauricio Herrera was pretty impressive by Ortiz. I'm sounding like a Ortiz nut hugger, but you know when someone's like standing up straight up and they're totally out cold, man, like that is a brutal knockout, man, and that's what happened.
Yeah, I think that's the individual knockout of the year, but I think you've got to say something about Wilder, because I mean,
I kind of hate Wilder, though. I hate.
He seems to be getting more powerful. Like that shit, Ortiz doesn't even look like anything. Like, it doesn't look like a huge monstrous shot, does it? That you kind of see. It was just bang, snap, and he's gone.
Yeah.
It was, you know, he's got scary power. But I agree with you. The Herrera knockout is the one, but Wilder needs a mention because they were two crazy knockouts.
Mm. Cam, the Flores Jr. knockout is just an amazing lead left hook, and he jumps in with it, and it's beautiful, man. It's really, really nice. If I'm not mistaken, this dude is also like a prospect to watch, man. Like, I've seen a few articles about him, but, yeah, it's hard to say. I think in general, like you said, Leon, for knockouts, what Wilder is doing, I mean, for some reason, it sounds like we're all fans of Wilder now, even though we've all shat on him many times in the past, but.
I'm going to shit on him right now, actually, because like, I don't really want to give him credit. I give him credit when it's due, but the thing about Wilder for me is, he even admitted it recently in an interview, didn't he? Didn't he say, like, you have to be perfect for, like, 12 rounds, but I only have to be perfect for, like, a second?
Yeah.
Basically, he's saying that I'm a shit boxer and I just got to get a lucky punch. Isn't it? Really?
Well, it's not lucky, mate. That's not luck, though, right?
Yeah, yeah. I don't think it's luck. I think he's training for, you know, because he's just a weird fighter. I mean, but I think I'll say it again, he looks extraordinarily confident going into those. At any point, these two fights, he looked like he was going to lose now. Like, I think that's the difference. Like, that first Ortiz fight, Ortiz was well in and winning that fight. This time round, I felt confident Wilder was always going to get to him.
Yeah.
Even if he was losing the fight, the first one, I was like, this could happen. Wilder could lose this. Second fight, not even a second thought.
And the other thing about Wilder is he seems a bit mentally weak when it comes to like getting props from other people. Like I've seen him in interviews saying that he feels that Floyd hasn't really co-signed him, and like he felt that, you know, like he should like pass on the mantle to him and say like this is the next dude. And because in Floyd interviews, like he said that he thought Fury won the fight and blah blah blah. And Wilder's also said it about Tyson, Mike Tyson. He said, you know, like he feels that Mike Tyson's not really, you know, giving the props and all that. And if you do see interviews, Tyson does question, you know, his resume and his actually skill set, which is fair because, you know, I've been reading Tyson's biography, and you know, while I've been reading it, I've been going back and watching all the old fights again. And if you look at like Tyson's third or fourth fight, fifth fight, when he was on ESPN with the whose name escapes me, on Bernstein. Bernstein was doing like the post-fight interview, and Tyson was very technical. He was telling Bernstein why he was doing what he was doing and stuff like that. Wilder doesn't know anything that he does. He just knows that he's going to land a big punch. Like he does not have no technicalities in boxing at all. So when you're kind of like asking these guys to co-sign you and shit, like I think personally you should, you know, like let your fights do the talking. Yeah, you're getting knockouts and they're impressive, but skill set wise, man, Wilder is shit.
I don't know, man. I think you're not giving him enough credit.
Are you
possibly?
I think there's Fury. Definitely.
Nah, man. I think Fury outboxes Fury. Him and actually gets the decision this time.
I think he gets him this time.
You think Wilder knocks Fury out?
Yeah.
Possibly. Like this whole build-up.
Boy, sorry, but I think that there's you can clip that out and see if that comes back to bite me.
All right, I'll keep it in the bank.
Yeah. All right, guys. See you later.
All right, Leon. Cheers. No, thank
man.
You.
And we got the two best categories coming up.
Fucking, you're waffling all those shit about fights no cunt cares about for ages. Come on, hurry up, then.
Okay, let's go to moment of the year, okay? Quickly. It's Khan dyeing his hair blonde, Tim Bradley's Ric Flair rant, Michelle Joy Phelps' Saudi Arabia coverage, Pauly losing to Artem in bare-knuckle boxing, or Errol Spence's car crash. Which one do you think?
If I add to that, Tim Bradley's rant about Gervonta Davis, that was funny as well.
That's what I mean with Ric Flair rant, bro.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. I thought it was something else.
I know which one Leon's going to pick.
What do you think I'm going to pick?
Michelle Joy Phelps' Saudi Arabia coverage.
I did not see any of it. It's got to be the car crash. It's got to be the car crash. I mean, that how you walk away from that. Like, you're signing a deal with the devil to get out of that alive, man. Because you look at that, you think that person's definitely dead.
Okay, quickly, we'll do bum of the year as well, and then we'll Cam and I will finish it. So bum of the year, one, Amir Khan, two, Kell Brook, three, Andrew Ruiz, obviously, four, Mark Kriegel. Mauro Ranallo is also a nominee. Pauly Malignaggi or Tunde Ayai?
Tunde, bro. Your favorite trainer?
I admire Tunde's kind of staunch belief that he's right. So, I mean, that is a strength. I always want to say Kell Brook.
That's always a default choice.
It's like a standard fucking award.
That is a good, some good choices there. Pauly getting battered in the bare knuckle.
Oh, mate.
Yeah, Kell Brook. Everyone wants it to be Kell Brook. Isn't he fighting soon?
He is indeed.
He is. He's back, is he? Who's he fighting?
He's fighting Mark DeLuca or something.
Didn't he already fight? The stripper gave him a proper beating, didn't he?
Zarafa, he did indeed, yeah.
Man, oh man. Brooks Duncan.
What about yours, Kimo, before you get on to the last thing?
My bum of the year? I mean, from a... Mark Regal is definitely taking the cake in terms of utter bumminess. You know what I mean? But Tunde, I mean, Jesus Christ. Like, that was also another epic fill. It's hard, man. There's a lot of bums in boxing. And these two are excellent nominees. Paulie, I don't even want to give him an award because I just fucking hate the guy and I can't stand him. And I'm glad he got beat up in a fucking bare knuckle ring. And I don't know what he was thinking. Like, why would you do this? Are you that desperate for money? Like, you're a fucking idiot for taking that fight. But Andy Ruiz definitely, you know, deserves it too. Like, the way that he fucking let everything fall apart, he's definitely a bum as well. So, yeah, good for those fuckers.
Yeah. Good list, Chemo. All right, I'll speak to you soon, guys. See you later.
All right. Say hi to your girl.
Right. Cheers, Leon. Thank you.
All right, Cam, do you want to just go back to moment of the year and do you want me to repeat it or do you still remember?
For me, I think it's... I don't know. I didn't watch the Paulie losing to Artem. I don't really want to give it for Spence for crashing his car. I don't think he was on that show, was he, when I was shitting on Spence? So I think I give him enough abuse about his accident. I did like Bradley's rant against Javonte and then like Javonte replying on Twitter and going back and forth a bit. I thought that was quite funny, so I'd probably give it to Timmy.
Yeah, he did kind of steal the show there, didn't he? And I enjoyed it. I don't know why man, people were going crazy about this. Like, I really don't understand. Like, there was fucking racism going on.
I think it's to your point that all of a sudden there's loads of, like, Javonte fanboys out of the way. And they forget, this is Tim Bradley, man. He fucking fought everybody. He ducked no one. He was a fucking warrior.
He ducked Khan.
He ducked Khan, but everyone ducks Khan, though. Even Mayweather. But,
yeah, you don't want
to fight. So, and... to be fair, like, maybe he was a bit overcritical, but he was speaking from the heart. You know, he had his heart on his sleeve. He almost went a bit Teddy. You know, like, that was a bit of a Teddy Atlas rant, don't you think?
Yeah.
But yeah, he didn't say anything bad. So, like, props to him, man, that he was speaking his mind. I like that. We need to see more of that. Like, there's too much company men business in the boxing world. Like, ESPN will only talk about ESPN fighters, only top-ranked fighters. If they show an image of the belt, they won't include the belt, which is on the other side. And now, that's just some petty shit, man. Come on.
Man, honestly, like, I really, really don't understand the backlash. Because everybody was calling him a company man, right? And it's like, I don't even see it that way. The guy was cutting a promo, and he obviously spent a lot of time with Teddy Atlas, right? So maybe that rubbed off on him a little bit.
Definitely.
But it's only good for the sport. He's only hyping up a fight that should happen. So I really, really don't understand. And man, there was a lot of like, I don't want to say the word, but like there were a lot of people that said some very fucked up profanities about him just for cutting that promo, you know?
Yeah.
Like, they were pulling like racist fucking terms from the slavery age. And like, I'm sorry, Americans, I love you, but you have serious fucking mental issues if you turn that into a race thing. Honestly, like there's something wrong with your fucking society in that sense. And I really, really do not understand it. It was a fun moment on TV. I thoroughly enjoyed it. And I'm glad Bradley is kind of coming into his own, man. On TV, like I've always enjoyed him. So I really don't see anything wrong with it. So in that sense, yeah, I can definitely give that moment to him. The whole Saudi Arabia fight as well. You know, I just laughed about it. Like, there was so much crap going on. And it's just like, guys, I understand your political point of view. But this is the fucking fight game, okay? It's two people getting in the ring to bash each other's brains in. And you want to, like, talk about morals and political point of views and, oh, this is an outrage. Like, get the fuck out of here, man. Like, I really, really thought it was... Just insane, just ridiculous. Like, if you really in this corrupt ass sport, like, you're gonna talk about, like, the topic of morality when it comes to where the fight has taken place? Like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, anyway, so yeah, that was pretty much it, Cam. That was my year list. I don't know if you had anything else to add.
No, really good list, Kimo. Thanks for compiling that. And yeah, 19, as we said earlier, not the greatest year, but the second half of it, or more likely the third half of 2019, definitely did pick up. That's where most of the Fight of the Year contenders and knockouts and stuff came from. So let's hope we get a good 2020. But shall we move on and talk about two fights that happened last weekend and a bit of news, and then just get into a quick little preview?
Let's do it. Let's do it.
All right, Kimo, let's talk about Julian Williams. We've mentioned it before about comeback of the year and fight of the year possibly, but wow, man, big upset at the start of the year, start of January almost, you know, halfway through. And I don't think many people saw him losing against Rosario, and he got stopped. Crazy.
How well did you know Rosario before going into this fight? Because I wasn't that familiar with him, and I also wasn't familiar with his awesome fighter named Banana. I mean, that is just fucking genius. But were you that familiar with him?
Honestly, I did look him up a bit beforehand, and I know that he got stopped against a guy called Nathan Gallimore, and that's a guy that J-Rock beat, and it's a guy that my boy Erickson Lubin beat last year. So I didn't really think that, you know, this guy's going to cause J-Rock any issues, because I thought, well, if Gallimore stopped him, you know, it's the, you know, triangle theories, isn't it? And sometimes they backfire in your face. And yeah, I had no idea that Rosario was so heavy-handed and he'd be able to buzz and hurt J-Rock.
Man, he looked big. He looked strong. He was throwing punches with fucking hurtful intentions, man. Like, I was impressed. He reminded me a little bit sometimes of the Charlo fight against Harrison, where, so, you know, he would throw a nice, lanky, like, fucking crisp jab a lot of times. And then all of a sudden he would switch to, like, throwing bombs in a wild manner. Like, he did not make it easy for J-Rock to kind of read him, you know? And he, the size of him in the ring as well. He just looked like a much bigger, stronger guy. And we all know that J-Rock is a bit vulnerable. And I hate to say it, Cam, but I do think at this point we need to kind of question his chin a little bit. I don't think he's got a bad chin, but if he gets hit in the right way,
yeah,
he just loses it in the fight. It's a little bit AJ-esque, you know? Like, I don't think AJ has a bad chin, but if you hit him in the right spot at the right time, you know, he has a very hard time recovering, man. Yeah. Like, the legs just go. Like, he's done.
No, totally. Like, I think I mentioned this last year. He had a really good podcast interview with Teddy Atlas, and he was talking very frankly, and he was like, yeah, people are saying, oh, he's got no chin. And he said, I knew that I've got a chin. I'll come back and I'll beat Herd. I'll come back and I'll beat Herd for the title. And he did it. But yeah, you have to question his chin now, because as you say, when he reacts, he reacts so badly. Like, he was on such wobbly legs, and Kim, I was shouting at the TV, like, take a knee, man. Like, take a knee. Like, even if he took two knees in that round, you know, take one, you get up, the guy's going to come back and barrage you. You know what? Take a second one. It's only a 10-7 round, you know. You can turn that around. You can win the next however remaining rounds, 10-9. You can maybe drop him. He might get a point deduction later on. There's so many things that happen. People, I don't know if it's a thing that they're not taught about taking a knee, or if it's a man thing. Like, nah, you can't take a knee, man. That's a bitch move. I don't understand it, but he would have benefited so much from taking a knee at that point. But instead, he was flailing around, tried to hold on, didn't work. He's lucky that Benji Estevez didn't count that first kind of slip knockdown, because to me, that's a knockdown. You're hurt and you try and grab on and you fall. That's a knockdown. Estevez gave him the benefit of doubt. And to your point, what you made after watching the fight, a really good stoppage from Benji Estevez.
I mean, look, you don't need to be on the floor spasming out for somebody to realize that you're done. And one thing that Banana did absolutely beautifully is once he realized the guy was hurt, he just was patient for like a second and a half, and then all of a sudden he saw the opening for the uppercut and he let it go. And it just, the moment that hit J-Rock, you could just see the eyes like roll back visibly, and he was completely unaware of where he was. And the referee is standing very close to him, right? He can see this. And that's a dangerous situation, because when you're sitting like that on the ropes or leaning back or whatever, you're basically letting a professional puncher take a free shot at you, man. And that's very dangerous, right? So J-Rock was completely unaware where he was. Benji jumps in, and you can see the moment that Estevez like grabs a hold of him, you know, J-Rock does almost like a oof, like a whoa, like he does. It's like he literally just realized like what the fuck is happening. And I think it's a terrific stoppage, man, because if it would have continued, it's basically a free for all for Mr. Banana. And that's bad news for J-Rock. So he can live to fight another day. You know what I mean? And, but yeah, it's tough, man. This is a tough fucking lost Cam. I really feel for him because he built himself back up, and it must have been taking a lot of blood, sweat, and tears. And now he's lost, not in a decision, like in a knockout again, and he lost his title. So
you think,
I don't know, man.
You know, playing it back, do you think that cut made a big difference? You think if he didn't have that cut, do you think he would have got stopped? I know it's like easy to say now, but.
He was like playing with it with his left hand or right hand a little bit continuously, and it obviously bothered him. And I watched it back once again because I was wondering, like, did he get hit with punches on the side where the cut was, and maybe he didn't see a hook coming or whatever? That wasn't the case. So look, man, it's hard to say, but it's this shit happens. And it doesn't mean that you automatically lose the fight. Like we've seen guys fight with half of their fucking face hanging off their eyebrows, you know, like it's hard to say, but it wasn't a horrendous cut, I thought.
It was crazy as well, body frame wise as well. Like Rosario looked like a middleweight, like he looked so much bigger than J-Rock.
He's huge, Cam. He's absolutely huge. He just looked like every shot that he was hitting J-Rock with was visibly worrying him and visibly hurting him. And it wasn't the other way around, because I remember at one point J-Rock landed a very, very clean right hand on him, and he just walked through it. You know what I mean? Yeah. And that's the point in the fight where I realized, like, hang on. this dude is going to be a problem for 12 rounds if it goes that long, right?
Yeah, J-Rock landed a lot of good right hand over the tops of the jab of Rosario, and it had no effect. And eventually Rosario started doing the same thing to J-Rock. Like J-Rock would throw a kind of half-hearted jab, and then that quick, fast counter right hand over the top started buzzing J-Rock. But big upset with the good fight. And again, nice to see a bit of humbleness from J-Rock. We didn't hear that, my favourite phrase, no excuses, but. You know, he gave all praises to Rosario, said, we got a rematch clause, we're going to execute it. So, you know, run it back again, and hopefully he'll be able to do anything. But if he reacts in the rematch to those type of punches in the same way, then yeah, I can't see him winning the rematch. He's going to have to just box from an outside boxing move. He can't stand on the inside with Rosario, I don't think.
Yeah, but even that, like Rosario's jab was beating J-Rock's jab a lot of times as well. So I don't think it's that easy to outbox somebody like that, man. And when you're that vulnerable and you lose like that, like Rosario knows, like the next time I'm going to fucking put the pressure on you and you're going to fold eventually, because he's going to get hit. I think J-Rock's got good upper body movement, by the way. I like his boxing stance. I like his skills, but he can be hit. And by somebody with that kind of power, like at that weight class, who looks that big, it's just going to be tough to stay away from him, man.
That's a good point. I didn't think about that, but you're definitely right. Anything else regarding this fight?
No, man. I like the Banana. I want to see more of him. I think he's a very exciting fighter.
The Banana, what a nickname. Undercard on this card was Chris Colbert versus Jezreel Corrales. And I was kind of favoring Corrales for this because, I know he's kind of a veteran beating a lot of good people, but everyone was hyping this Chris Colbert out. And I don't think I've ever seen him before. And I don't understand what the hype was really like. He didn't really impress me at all. I know Corrales is a really awkward fighter, such like weird upper body movement, hard to kind of pin down, but maybe I have to see Colbert again against someone a bit more orthodox and then maybe be able to gauge how good he is. But against the Corrales, I didn't see the speciality in him. But anyway, same night, very good timing as well. You know, unlike a lot of boxing events that go up against each other, Chemo, I know you don't stay up because of the timings of Abu Dhabi, but a lot of the times, like, the main events are clash against the main events and you have to either pick one or the other and then watch it the next day. But the Fox card ran kind of early, just as J-Rock finished the headline on the ESPN card, which was Michael Seals versus Aleida Alvarez, came on. I thought it'd be a better fight than it was, to be honest. I remember Seals a couple of years ago in like a fight of the year contender against what was his name, Edwin Rodriguez, and that was just like a crazy like 3-4 round barn burner. But this was a bit sloppy, man. A lot of holding and shit. I think Seals was just doing too much of it. But eventually, Alvarez got a really good knockout, almost like a knockout of the year type of candidate again. So we had like an upset of the year and a knockout of the year candidate on the same night, mid-January then. Maybe, hopefully, we don't get all our sweets in one go and like get nothing for the rest of the year. But yeah, that was it regarding the kind of two fights we've had so far. Joe Smith fought as well earlier in the month, but his fight against Jesse Hart wasn't a great fight either, to be honest. Hart was just basically running around the ring. He was doing Anthony Joshua, but even faster. And like, Smith looked kind of crude as well, not being able to pin him down. He just looked wild and shit, but he got the win. It was a split. It shouldn't have been. Even Bob Arum, man, he's promoted Hart from the start, and he said that judge that give it to Hart, man, should be sacked. So that was kind of crazy to hear. But that's it regarding the fight so far in 2020. Just two pieces of news, Chemo, I wanted to get your opinion on. One is Josh Taylor leaving Cyclone, apparently signing to Top Rank. I'm not sure if it's official because, you know, a lot of these boxers, as soon as they start getting money, people start speaking to their ears and saying, yeah, you'll be able to get this contract. And then they end up being in court and going through bowls of bullshit. So who knows if it's official and if he'll be able to move over straight away. But apparently he signed to Top Rank on a multi-fight deal. You know, Barry, as always, is like, no, mate, you're signed to me. So who knows? But obviously because of his allegiance to his dad, Shane said, yeah, he's no longer gonna train Taylor. So what's your whole opinion on this? I've not heard anything. I know we kind of conversate quite often about what's happening in the boxing world, but I've not really heard your opinion about this.
It's just hard to say, Cam. Like, if you're not really
in the know,
in the inner circle, it's very, very tough to say. I don't really know. Look, man, I like Josh a lot. I'm a huge fan. I just don't want any of this fuckery to impact his career. But it's really hard to really say anything about it, man. Like, I really don't know. Do you take anything away from this in terms of people's character or anything like that?
I would have thought if... It's difficult because I think Cyclone have done a very good job with Taylor. They signed him from an amateur, so they've had him from the start. I think they've matched him very well at good times. Like, they've not took it easy on him and like, oh, we'll build his record up until he's like 25 and no. Like, he was fighting high level guys in his 13th, 14th fight. So,
but they also have a shady track record, Cam.
Like, yeah, they definitely have a shady track record. But I think
Well, I was going to say, you would have thought that maybe Josh would show a bit of loyalty, but I don't think there is loyalty in boxing, is there? But maybe if you are unhappy, at least let your contract run out. Like I said, I don't know the ins and outs, but if he is still under contract, he should have just came to him and said, look, thanks for everything you've done. We're running the contract out, and then they're moving on. I think you have to show a bit of respect after all they've done for you, to be honest.
Yeah, I don't know. Wasn't there that lady fighter that we had as well that was under Cyclone that had a lot of fucking legal issues? And or am I talking out of my ass now? I remember reading something about this like half a year back. And
it's not the only news article.
Huh?
My girl Chantal Cameron.
Yeah, was that her or am I talking about somebody else now?
No, yeah, she left them as well.
Yeah.
She left them as well. Kind of citing similar things like, oh yeah, can't really talk about it under contract, blah blah blah. But she went to MTK and then she started training with Jamie Moore. So the thing about Shane and obviously his dad is like, if they've got a problem with his dad, then they have to leave him as well, innit? Because he's not going to train him if they got beef with their dad. So it's a difficult situation. And Shane's stable of fighters is really thinned out now. Like if you look who he's got, like Luke Campbell, who's, you know, not that great. Lawrence Okolie, who's fucking terrible, and he's got a few other lads, but yeah, man, it's not looking great for Shane and his dad at the moment.
Well, I think the track record is slowly starting to, you know, speak for itself, unfortunately. I've always enjoyed Barry as sort of a character.
But not as a businessman.
But once you have so many people coming out, you know, and having this sort of shit, like, man, it just, I don't know. It's starting to say something. And I think didn't Frampton also have money issues with them?
Yeah.
It just doesn't look good, man.
There was a lot of shady shit. And what I found funny was, I think, I can't remember exactly. Maybe someone can hit me up on Twitter if they remember, but when Frampton left and he was having like his legal case against him, someone tweeted Taylor and said, oh, are you going to leave too? And he like quoted the tweet and like said, nah, man, I'm not leaving. And it's kind of ironic now that he's left as well. So I think definitely to your point, where there's smoke, there's usually fire as well. So, and I don't know about you, but I think, you know, when former boxers go into the business, you'd think that they'd have the interests of the fighters, you know, number one priority, but it's almost like the opposite happens. It's like they want to rape these fighters and like lock them into massive contracts where they get big percentages and shit. And it's weird. You think they want to protect them and that and think, you know what? I was once in that position, but I don't know, man. Like I said, I don't know enough about it, but like you say, it's crazy that so many people are leaving, citing like contract issues and stuff like that. So who knows? Let's move on anyway.
Let me just say, conclude on this. Like, I'm not going to judge Taylor on this. Like, it's really hard for me to say anything about his character and his loyalty. I just think there's enough evidence out there, you know, that he obviously considered moving on to, you know, a more stable organization. Let me put it that way.
A more stable.
Yeah.
Alright. Other person I wanted you to talk about and their split was Tyson Fury and Ben Davidson. What's your whole opinion on that?
It's a bit odd, man. Like, I don't really... Look, Ben Davidson is a nice guy, but I really don't know anything about him in terms of his competence as a trainer, right? We've all seen, like, the mitt work, and we've all seen the interviews, because he did get a lot of publicity when he started going with Tyson Fury. And it honestly seemed like Fury doesn't really need much of a trainer in his head, right? And that he just needed somebody to kind of hold the pads, be a motivational guy, and they seem to have good chemistry, so he just hired him as his trainer. Did he leave him based upon like a, you know, like a technical basis or whatever? Like he wanted somebody who's more experienced, or he wasn't getting what he wants from Ben? I really don't fucking know, but, you know, I'd rather have Fury train with somebody who's, you know, more of a knowledgeable guy, I guess. But at the same time, it's Tyson Fury, and I don't really give a shit.
Yeah.
Because I don't believe that he necessarily lives the life with all his WWE shit and all that. Like, his whole shtick is just getting old for me right now. Well, I'm really over the whole Tyson Fury thing, and he's not that cool, extravagant guy like he used to be for me.
Yeah.
At this point, I just find him quite annoying, and I just...
Well,
honestly, I'm rooting for Wilder now. I'm rooting for him to sleep him.
Well, I want to bring this up with you because you guys had a Mystic Men show last week and you said a similar thing about Connor, where that whole shit getting a bit old now, and the same applies to me for Fury. It's like, you're almost like a one-trick pony, man. It's like the only way you get headlines is by saying crazy shit. Like, oh, I'm going to knock out Deontay Wilder in two rounds. It's like, bro, you're not going to knock out Deontay Wilder. Come on. Even you know that, but because it's on pay-per-view, because you got to build the fight, they just start fucking spewing, you know, verbal diarrhea.
And it's not even good verbal diarrhea. Like, I can get down with verbal diarrhea, as you know. Like the Tony Harrison and Charlo fight. I mean, that was not good trash talk, right?
But it was hilarious. Entertaining. Yeah,
it was entertaining, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. I don't even mind some cringy stuff. But Fury at this point is just like, I don't know, man, with everything that transpired and all the inactivity and all the, you know, like two-faced shit that's going on with him, like I really, like, it's just getting old. Like, even when he shows up in those weird ass suits that he thinks looks cool and he just looks like a retard, like, I really don't care for it anymore, man. I'd rather have a Wilder who thinks he's some sort of motivational priest or whatever, you know, like, I mean, I don't know what the fuck he's talking about half of the time, but at least he's active and at least he's representing the sport and at least he wants to be there. You know, and that to me is a lot more worth than whatever Fury thinks he's doing with this. Like, he's still holding on to that lineal thing for dear life. Like, man, how many years ago was that? Like, get in the fucking ring and make some fights for God's sakes, and then we'll talk. And he's got the rematch now so he can prove himself.
Yeah, you know I love Joe Tessitore, but every time I hear him say, Tyson Fury, the lineal champion, I'm like, oh, fucking hell, man.
Yeah, exactly. That doesn't mean anything. Yeah. Like, the game has passed you by, man. That's like fucking Joe Frazier talking about his lineal championship, if he ever had one. I don't know. But, like, we're over it. Like, it's done. Like, you're not gonna cling onto it, right? Jesus Christ. Anyway, what else you got?
For news, that's about it. Kimo, unless you want to talk about stuff, like, I'll be honest with you, half the time I forget any, like, interesting shit that happens, but, just get onto, like, a few previews if you want, and then we call it a night, because it's pretty late over for you, so.
Yeah, let's do it.
So, tomorrow night we got Danny Garcia, versus Ivan Redkach, and Jarrod Hurd versus Francisco Santana. Totally honest. Two fights I'm not bothered about at all. You know, I'm not a Danny fan. Danny talks like every fight's like a world title fight and he fights no one, so I don't care about Danny Garcia.
Don't care about the opponent. Don't like getting Danny Garcia, and I'm, frankly, I don't care about him either unless he's in a fight where he can get knocked out, and that's when I will tune in. But, again, another guy that's like completely and utterly delusional about his own career. I accidentally stumbled upon an interview. I think it was one of the last fights that was on TV where they interviewed him and he's like, oh, nobody's done what I did in my career. Look at all that I've accomplished. I'm like, mate, you had a decent career, but you haven't accomplished that much. Okay. Like, calm the fuck down.
Yeah.
You know, especially a welterweight, you've either fought somebody relevant and lost and that's it. So. If you really want to fight Errol Spence, get in the ring, boy. I want to see that shit. Because I think Spence will eat him the fuck up.
Yeah. But talking about Spence, did you see the ringside interview he did with Brian Kenny when he was ringside at the Charlo Harrison rematch fight?
I probably did, yeah. What about it?
Like, Kenny was kind of pressing him for, like, you know, oh, when do you think he'd be back in the ring, man? Like, Kenny's a... I got love for Brian Kenny, man, but sometimes, yeah, like,
Errol just kind of been in an accident and shit, and like, he's kind of pressing him a bit hard, man. I thought he might go a bit easy on him, but he's grilling him pretty hard, and Kenny's a funny one because he's kind of burning the candle at both ends, because he's there over at Fox doing their calls and their commentary, and then he's on the DAZN shit, man. It's like he's getting paid by everyone. But when he's on DAZN, he's bigging up all the DAZN fighters. And when he's on Fox, he's bigging up all the Fox fighters. It's like, come on, man, like, be a bit more transparent. Like, I know the pain you're checking that, but keep it a bit real. Anyway, Miami 30, talking about DAZN, they have a card kind of pre-Super Bowl. So it's on a Thursday night. I don't know how many people are going to show up to this shit, but I'm really not happy with the way Demetrius Andrade's career is going. Chemo, he's fighting Luke Keeler, who's like a British level guy. He's active, as we spoke about before, but who cares if he's active when he's fighting nobodies? And he just signed a 4-year extension to his DAZN contract today, I think, so which I read. So I totally don't care about that fight. I think there's two YouTubers fighting. No idea who they are. Jake Paul versus Anderson Gibb or something. Don't give a shit. And then a really good fight is... two good fights. Tevin Farmer versus Jojo Diaz is a really good fight. And then Daniel Roman versus Mudryan Akhmedyaliyev is a really good fight as well. But I prefer the Farmer-Diaz fight. So what's your opinion on Andrade at the moment and how his career is unfolding at DAZN? And what do you think of Farmer-Diaz?
The Pirate of the Caribbean, huh?
Yeah.
Oh man. Look, when he got with Hearn, you know, there was all this talk about, you know, Andrade, he's a star. He's a star in boxing, you know, he's so talented, he's so this, he's so that. I haven't fucking seen it. I really don't know what to make of this guy. I used to rate him very highly, Cam. You know, when I first saw Andre, I was like, oh, this guy's amazing, good movement, not necessarily power, but he's got a lot of boxing skills, and I love the way he moves, you know? And now he's just, I don't know, he's almost become like a meme, you know what I mean? Like, he's become a bit of a joke. Like, who the fuck is he fighting? I mean, look at his last few opponents and this dude that he's going to face. Like, I'm sorry. I don't know anybody who he's facing of note. And at one point, like, if you're not going to face quality opposition, like, mate, despite how talented you are, I'm just not going to rate you. Like,
no? Yeah.
Really, I don't know whether it's management. I don't know whether it's him. I don't know what it is, but how old is he, by the way? Let me just look up his age real quick because I can't imagine that he has that many years left
31.
In the tank, or I could be wrong. He's 31. Okay, so technically he's got, what, like two, three years left in his prime. Okay, he's got a little bit of time, but he hasn't made that much money in boxing, right? He hasn't had that many big fights. Like, the dude needs to make moves now. So I don't know what the holdup is, but I'm probably not going to watch this fight. Are you? Like, I'm...
If I'm up, I'll watch it, but I'm really interested in the Jojo Diaz Farmer fight. That's a good fight.
Yeah, I like that fight too, man. Who'd you pick?
I'm high on Diaz, man, but I think Farmer's going to be hard to pin down. I don't know, actually, because Farmer struggled with that a few times. I think he struggled with that guy that got popped, the fight where he lost it, but then people thought he won it, and then the guy got popped, the Asian guy. So I don't know, I think Jojo, because he goes to the body as well, like he might be able to slow Farmer down and kind of make him static where he can start, you know, unloaded combinations on him. So I would I've got nothing against Tevin Farmer, man. He seems like a nice dude and that, but he's a bit boring, man. And like, I've always preferred...
He's a spoiler.
Yeah, I've always preferred, like, Jojo Diaz's style. So, I think Farmer's going to win, but I want Jojo Diaz to win. If that makes sense.
I would root for Jojo as well, but I think both guys are a little bit flawed, man. Like, Farmer, as you said, he's a bit of a spoiler. He's not that exciting to watch. But I can imagine he's really annoying to fight.
You know, yeah. He's not an easy task.
No.
But I don't really, I like Jojo Cam, but I don't really rate him as elite either. So I think he's going to struggle here, man. That's my only worry.
He probably will. He had a good few rounds against, what's his name? T-Rex Arms that never fights, only fights like once a year.
Gary Russell.
Yeah, he had a good start against Gary Russell, but then kind of Russell took over and, you know, started dominating him. So I don't know. That was his first loss.
That boy fast. That boy fast, man.
That boy fast. All right, let's move on.
T-Rex Arms, they go quick.
February 1st, we got Jose Ramirez versus Victor Postol, which is still a decent high-level fight. That's in China for some reason, but when I look at...
What?
Yeah, I don't know if it's a financial incentive or something, because a guy that was supposed to be on the undercard was supposed to fight Beterbiev or something, but I think Beterbiev's kind of questioned fighting out there because of how China's, you know, treated some of their Muslim population and stuff like that. So I think that fight got scrapped, but the main fight is still going ahead, which is Ramirez versus Postol. But having said that, when you look at that fight on BoxRec right at this moment, it's not there anymore. So I don't know if that's just a Bob Arum thing, that he's got a disagreement with BoxRec at the moment, or if the fight's been scrapped. So no idea. But if the fight goes ahead, Kimo, what do you think of Ramirez versus Postol?
You know I'm going with Ramirez, bro. Come on. I love that guy.
No, I could see it being a good fight, though, man. Postol's not shot to shit, though. Yeah, he's still a very decent high-level fighter. Like, he give Josh Taylor a run for his money.
By the way, I'm seeing headlines. I'm not sure how legit these websites are, but that the bout is cancelled.
Possibly, then. So we might just be wasting the time talking about it. So let's move on, then. February 8th in Sheffield. Kell Brook versus Matt DeLuca. Kid Galahad versus Claudia Marrero. Don't give a shit. We can move on if you're happy to.
Fucking bum. What a loser. I swear to God, Kell Brook is the laughing stock of the fight game. But, like, unbelievable.
Don't you think he knows that, like, his career's going downhill? Like, what? Is he just happy picking up these checks from Eddie, thinking, yeah, man, making good money, fuck it?
Is he really? How much is he getting for this shit?
No idea, but, like, he must have a minimum or something. He must have some deal in place with Hearn. Like, he's not going to take shit money, is he?
How many times... This is what I don't... I just find it hilarious. This is, and I think people... I know people at Sky definitely drink the Kool-Aid, right? But, like, how many times are we going to do the same narrative around this guy? How many times are we going to do that walkout in Sheffield with all the lights? And then it's like, oh, Kell Brook is back. Can he make another run for the title? And it's like, mate, this is the 10th time that you fucking said this, and he's fighting another bum like those other 10 times. Like, what are we really going to take from this? Like, are we really doing this serious? Like, you remember that tweet I sent you the other day? Like, I was like, who's writing this? Can they write this with a straight face? Like, it's just mind-boggling. This guy is a failure.
It's to the point also, I think, Sky in an awkward position, as we talked about when Leon was still on that. Matchroom UK stable is that weak now. They've got, like, the Joshua, which is, like, you know, the stadium filler. And they've kind of got this emptiness in the middle now. They've still got some of their Olympians coming up, and still, a lot of them have kind of stumbled. Like, Josh Kelly's not done as well as most people thought. You know, Anthony Fowler kind of stumbled up against Fitzgerald, and, you know, Coley's supposed to be possibly fighting soon against Glowacki and stuff like that. But there's no other guys that can, you know, do decent bums in seats apart from really Brooks. So I think, like, they're just using him to, you know, fill in the middle ground, because Sky used to have really good Saturday night shows now. Before, and now they don't. Like, the Saturday night shows are very weak. Anything half decent is pay-per-view now, which is a big shame, and it's something that I don't think can continue. It's not sustainable. They can't keep doing that, because they're just not going to get the figures.
It's crazy, man. These shows are just absolutely useless, man.
Feb 15th in Nashville, Caleb Plant is going home. It's his defense of his IBF super middleweight title against Mandatory
Vincent Fagelbutz. I have no idea anything about Fagelbutz, to be honest. I've never seen him, never watched him, so. I know Plant's a really good fighter. I can't blame him for taking this, it's a mandatory, but, really, we want to see him in there now against, you know, another top super middleweight, like, they got PBC, so it's, you know, him and Benavidez would be an amazing fight. But yeah, what do you think?
Sorry, what was the name of his opponent?
Vincent Feigenbutz, F-E-I-G-E-N-B-U-T-Z.
Who the fuck is that guy? Jesus Christ.
Mandatory.
No comment, Cam.
All right, Feb 22nd.
Absolutely useless.
I don't think we'll do a show between... With our track record recently, like, with the inconsistency, I can't see us doing a show before 22nd of February. So, what's your view on Wilder Fury then? Do you think Wilder starches him then, as you said earlier?
I think so, man. I think Wilder's only going to get better. And I think Fury, with all the crap that he does in the WWE... I just don't think he's about that life anymore, man. Wilder's more consistent. He's honing his craft. I think he's just, yeah, man, he's just improving and he's so confident right now. He lives boxing, man. That's one thing you can't take away from the guy. Like, yes, he is flawed, but he trains his ass off. He lives the life. He's constantly in the gym. He hasn't let money or anything like that gone to his head. And I just favor that the guy who's more consistent than somebody who is immensely talented, but frankly, I just don't believe he lives the life. And the first fight is a very interesting fight, obviously. I mean, Fury did really, really well. But Wilder is just so incredibly powerful. And there's a lot of guys that you give, you know, like a puncher's chance, Cam, and then you say, like, well, if you're not going to hit him with the right shot, you're not going to win. And there's a lot of guys like that have been in boxing over the years. But the problem is with Wilder is that he will find a way to hit you. And once that happens, mate, it's big trouble. But I think he can hang. I think Wilder can always hang. I don't think he was ever, you know, like, dominated by Fury. I think domination is a very strong word. I don't think he was ever dominated. And Fury will not hurt him. As much as he's claiming he's going to go for a knockout, like, he's full of shit. He's not going to. So, yeah, I got Wilder, man. I just have more confidence in him at the moment. I know you're going for Fury.
Yeah, I'm going for Fury. We see it often that judges are swayed in a rematch because of what happened in the first fight. And so many people think Tyson won the first fight that I think going into this rematch now, whoever the judges are now will have like a preconceived idea that if it's a lot of boxing and a lot of movement from Fury, then like he's going to win the rounds and he wins the fight. So the only way Deontay wins is by a stoppage or like multiple knockdowns, which, you know, gives him the extra points. So, yeah, I favor Fury. I think Fury has to be, you know, on it in every round. He lapsed in that last fight. I don't think he'll lapse again, but I kind of want to say fuck you to both of them because they wasted a year, you know, with the secret agreement they made to like go and fight other fights and stuff. This rematch should have really happened in 2019 and look what happened, you know, Fury got his eye cut now. Will that cut affect and open up in this fight against Deontay? Possibly. And whose fault's that? Mm-hmm. His fault. So, sometimes you get what you deserve, so. They both kind of just took the piss with the boxing public and just wanted to, you know, have a bit of an extra money grab. Both guys fought twice. Made more money. I don't know, like, two fights that Wilder had, you know, two violent KOs. One fight of Fury, okay. Other fight, he looked like shit. So sometimes it's not the best idea to, you know, avoid the immediate rematch. But yeah, I'm mumbling on a bit. I'm picking Fury. But I'm not that hyped, as I said before. Like, I'm a bit tired of both guys' antics, or both guys' comments, both guys' quoted comments, and this is going to happen and that's going to happen. It's like, kind of done with these guys. Let's just get this fight out of the way.
Yeah, I feel you, man. The presser was cringy as hell, and I just want to see it. Like, they're not exactly entertaining on the mic, so let's just get it on. It'll be a great fight. I'm sure it will be. A lot of tension in the air.
Hopefully we'll do a show after the fight. If we don't, let's just talk about this card quickly. When this fight was announced on this one fight deal with Micah Garcia signing with DAZN, it's just classic Hearn, isn't it? Come sign with us, we'll give you someone shit to fight. Like, I'm not interested in Micah Garcia versus Jesse Vargas. Like, Vargas, man, he's not that good, man. And who cares about this fight, Kimo?
Dude, Vargas is like one of the most vanilla fighters in boxing. Like, I just really don't care about him. He doesn't move the needle. He does, and his style is boring as fuck. Like, I just don't want to watch him, period. Whether it's against Mikey Garcia or anybody else.
Yeah, I think Eddie feels like he's got a bit of loyalty to him because he was one of the first few people that signed to DAZN USA, and him and Dimitri and that. So I think he thought, yeah, I'll give him a bit of a payday. Plus, I don't think he's got... Well, you could have fought Brooke, I guess. But, yeah, maybe just American name would be a better thing. I don't care, like I said, about this fight. I am very intrigued about an undercard fight that was announced last week, though, Kimo. And you will be invested too. It's Cal Yafai versus Roman Jogledido Gonzalez. Like, what's your opinion on this? Like, is this the fight that Choco's just, you know, he's just too old and he's gonna lose to this shit guy, or can he like beat Yafai, man? Like, what's your opinion? Like, I personally think Choco's still got enough left in him to beat Yafai, because Yafai's not that good. But I'd hate for Yafai to have like Roman Gonzalez on his W on his resume, man. That'd be heartbreaking, man.
See, I don't think he does, Cam. I don't think Gonzalez has enough left to really convincingly beat somebody who's in his prime and that we can consider kind of good, maybe. I don't know. I don't think Yafai is good either, but like he can make it an ugly fight. You know, he can make it a tough, rugged ass affair that Choco just has problems dealing with. Chocolatito has been through a lot. I just don't really have a lot of faith in him. I know he looked, you know, okay recently. But I don't trust him, unfortunately, man. And this is a fighter that's very, very dear to my heart. Like, shit, he might even be one of my favorite fighters of all time. Especially in the generation that I watched boxing, you know? But I find it very hard to pick him, man, in this. And I don't, like I said, I don't rate Yafai that highly, but he can hang. You know, he can hang, he can make it ugly. I know this fucker likes to clinch a lot as well. Like, I don't know. I can see him win like a rugged decision, you know, something like that.
I could see Choco just throwing it back a couple of years and just, you know, high guard, like walking your fight down, doing his shifts where he goes from like southpaw to orthodox and shit. I could see it, like the return of the old Choco, you know. I'm feeling it, Kimo.
I think you're picking with your heart a little bit, but let's hope you're right, because yeah, I'd hate to just have your fight, you know, put that name on the resume without actually really fighting the true Roman Gonzalez, you know.
Yep. And that's it, Kimo. I'm pretty much done. Anything else you want to talk about?
No, man. It seems a bit seems to be a bit light in boxing these days. Not really anything that's getting me super pumped at the moment.
January is that stage of like fights being made, though. I think like in the next few weeks we'll get a lot of announcements for like April fights and May fights. So hopefully we'll get some juicy fights made.
I hope so, man. There's a few things I really want to see happening. Like, I want to see Jacobs, for example, versus a Charlo. Like, that's one thing I want to see. There's a few fights that are on the possible fights that are on the horizon that really need to get made. And one I've mentioned so many fucking times, I don't need to anymore. But, like, if Spence Crawford doesn't happen this year, like, I'd be severely disappointed. I don't give a shit what promoter they're under. Like, it needs to happen ASAP.
Has the accident changed your opinion on anything about the outcome of that fight?
No, because I don't know anything, if he's been affected health-wise, right? If there's anything, like if he's got issues with his spine or whatever after that, then it's a different story. But from what I know, the dude is still the same, right?
I broke my back. It's spinal.
Yeah, exactly. But,
you need to watch that interview with Kenny, man, because he didn't look good, you know. He looked a bit like slow and he was slurring a bit. I don't know if he was still under medication and that, but. To me, he doesn't look like a guy that could fight in the summer.
Maybe not in the summer, but we'll see. Unless I hear any sort of medical report that says that he's unfit to fight, I'm just going to assume that he's Errol Spence, you know. So,
love you, daddy.
Yeah. I love you, daddy.
Regarding Jacobs fighting Charlo, it's unlikely because he's campaigning at 68 now and Jamal is at 60 and Jamel's still at 54, so if that happens, it's not going to happen this year, I don't think.
Is Jacobs, like, has he really, he's not going to go back to 60? Has he closed that chapter then or what?
Yeah, he said, you know, like, he made it for the Canelo fight, but like the Chavez fight, it was 68 even though Chavez missed weight. But yeah, he's
yeah, campaigned. That I know, but
he's campaigning at 68 now. No, he said that, you know, it's too much wear and tear on his body. That's another guy that, you know, left his trainer as well. So, apparently that was over money as well. Cause you know what happens, isn't it? It's a percentage. And when these guys get bigger money, then the percentage is bigger. So they don't want to give it. They'd rather give it to someone that's taking a smaller percentage, but it's up to them and it, their money.
Mm. Unfortunate, but, cause they had a very close relationship, right?
Yeah, seems so. But money talks.
Oh well.
Cool, Kimo. Always a pleasure.
Likewise, brother. Long overdue, but,
should we try and be more consistent? At least like once every 2 months or something.
I agree. We should.
Once every 2 months. Yeah, it's not too hard to do.
No.
All right, Kimo, I want to thank you. I want to thank all the people that download the show and interact with us on Twitter and stuff. Man, it's still nice to see, you know, when we have a bit of banter with some of our fans. So thank you. We'll be back hopefully in the next couple of weeks. Peace.
You just listened to the Boxing Coalition.
Oh, dude. Man, I love boxing. I fucking love boxing.
A big shout out to the Boxing Coalition.
You're a newbie.
Nah, I ain't new, man.
If my fucking next door neighbour became the number one flymate in the world, do you know what I'd do? I'd fucking walk past the cunt.
Derek, how you doing, bro?
I was physically banging you, blood.
I disagree.
First time I hear the show, man, it was fucking badass.
Vamos a Argentina, la concha de su madre.
I see the bomb in them.
I get home and she's like, what the fuck? Me and the kid are here. Why don't you get home and talk to us? I'm like, man, you guys don't know shit about boxing.
Kel, how does it feel to be the new IBF champion?
Feels great.
Do we really dive into the black hole right off the jump?
I think he's hiding glass.
Just to play devil's advocate.
You want one portion of crow or two portions of crow?
Give me two portions with a supersized fries and a large drink, please.
I can't stand you more. I'm Scottish.
Cringe sight.
But you won't rush Anthony fucking fat ass Joshua, would you?
He's not fat.
Yeah, how about you tell us what you weigh for your final thoughts?
My weight?
Thank you for listening to the Boxing Coalition.